Good evening, brothers and sisters of the Leaf. Coming to you live from the corporate headquarters of Cadre Cola, it's the Tuesday Night Cigar Club Podcast. Tonight, the boys get out their travel passes and journey into the not-so-unrealistic future as they discuss the highly relevant 1987 Arnold Schwarzenegger classic, The Running Man. The crew will be lighting up the tasty 1502 Nicaragua cigar from Global Premium Cigars and pairing it with the highly enjoyable Hop Hunter IPA from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. If you're looking for a highly topical discussion of current events, fueled by round after round after round of pints and stogies, well, this episode is sure to hit the spot. Just like Cadre Cola hits the spot with its crisp, delicious, and super refreshing taste. So get out your Tuesday Night Cigar Club home game, folks. Light them up and enjoy the show.
Oh, sweet mother of balls. It's hot outside.
It's only June.
It is, man.
It's only June.
Just like the heat's just beating me down.
My mom took my little girl to the swimming pool last weekend for the first time. And I was like, God, is it that? I guess it's that time of year already.
Oh, yes.
And then I stepped outside and was like, oh, fuck. How the hell can she possibly exist in this?
What did Houston come up to Central Texas, man?
It's funny, though. She told me, she was like, Dad, I remember that park we went to that one time with that bathroom that you won't let me talk about anymore? And I was like, oh, yes, I remember. She's like, the one at the swimming pool was worse. And she started to describe the bathroom at this public swimming pool, and it sounded like that bathroom and remember the first Saw where the guy was chained to the wall? It's like a dead body on the floor, just inches of mold and
the human filth was unimaginable.
It was horrible. I was like, just go in the water, for God's sake. Tell it. And then I was like, I remember when I was little, my cousin BC and I used to get taken to this. We didn't have a public swimming pool up in Ohio where we lived. There was this giant man-made hole in the ground somebody dug and filled with just dark hose water, but it was huge.
Yeah.
And they gave it the alluring name of Suntan Acres. And our moms, with my Aunt Susie and my mom, would take me and my cousin BC out there. And I'll never forget it. One day we were playing in the water, and BC had to go bathroom. So he's a little bit younger than me, and he went and he told his mom, my Aunt Susie, Mom, I'm going to use my BC voice. He didn't talk like this when he's little. Hey, Mom, I got to go potty. And she's like, so? Having a beer and a cigarette. You know, this is the 70s. Early 80s. She's like, so? He's like, Mom, I got to go potty. I don't want to go by myself. And she's like, it's Suntan Acres, man. Just go in the water. Nobody's going to know. So I'm still in the water. And they go back to reading, you know, their magazines and drinking their tabs or whatever. And all of a sudden, there's just this collective scream of beachgoers. And lifeguards, and you know, like a piranha attack has gone down or something, and everyone turns, and there's BC standing on the side of the water in Suntan Acres with his pants around his ankles, just pissing into the water. I don't know. That's just one of those small town America stories I like to tell. I think our listeners and you guys will. We're like Prairie Home Companion on NPR. If everyone went to Lake Wobegon and got drunk and pissed in Lake Wobegon.
I was about to say, usually around 4 a.m., we are like a drunken Harrison Keeler, man.
Garrison.
Garrison, Harrison. I've heard it both ways.
It doesn't matter. Either way, we're pissing in Lake Wobegon. And on that note,
the smell coming off of Suntan Acres.
Dude, he doesn't get Garrison Keeler.
Good man. Obviously, he is listening to him.
I love Garrison Keeler. Or Harrison.
BC's sun-drenched shoulders contrasted with his white prepubescent butt cheeks as his...
My Garrison Keeler wasn't too bad.
No, it wasn't.
Let's stop this before we go any further. Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast, episode 32?
33.
33.
Yeah, 32 was Wild Zero, which just dropped.
Yeah, we dropped today. I'm sorry.
Sayonara!
I just wrote up that episode page this morning, so I'm all about 32. 33. Lucky number 33, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Is it lucky?
Sure.
We
Double Trace.
As we promised last week on the show, we just actually wrapped an interview with Glenn Loop of Cigar Rights of America. There's a big fight going on now between Premium Cigars and the Food and Drug Administration. I promised he would come on the show. He read our online manifesto and wanted to sit in the hot seat. And he did. And it's a little too soon. I'm not quite sure how we did or if we got anything, but it was a pleasant chat. And we're going to put that up on the website as its own entity.
Yeah.
So we can cram as much.
I'll be curious to listen to it because I always leave these things like, you know, there's a million questions I want to ask, and you know, there's always the oh I should have asked that, but I do that with every single interview we ever do.
We do, and they all for the most part turn out okay. It's just such a mess, and we're not.
Of course, by the end,
we're
of
not
it,
George I'll... Stephanopoulos. I'm not, I'm not this trained. This trained media guy that can get to the bottom of stuff, but we do come to it from a common sense.
By the end, I was just crying,
and Tut is crying.
My hope was just smashed.
Yak Boy had soiled himself. It was a whole scene.
Just horrible.
But we're gonna put that up on YouTube. So go to the page. That'll have its own thing. You can look at that because, like I said, it's too fresh. I felt like we asked a ton of questions that I hadn't heard answers from.
Yeah.
On this.
Yeah.
Whether it's stuff we heard at Cats Fest or online.
And we learned some new things.
So I'm glad we did do that. I'm glad we talked to him. I appreciate him coming on. And we did ask a lot of stuff that I've been wanting to get an answer to. A lot of stuff he couldn't answer.
Yeah. Or wouldn't. Which is all
right. He was in the hot seat. judge for yourself. Let us know what you think. Let us know if it answered anything that was floating around in your brain. We did our best. But it all has to do with government overreach. It all has to do with waking up one day and things you enjoyed yesterday all of a sudden aren't available to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that deals a lot with the movie that we are doing tonight.
Does it ever?
Does it ever?
If they take away my cigars and my craft beer, I will join the lobby to take away Diet Cokes.
What do you have left?
Nothing. Misery.
Comic book movies.
That's really not enough. It's nowhere near equal.
It's not enough for me because I need beer and cigars to get through comic book movies. I don't know what you guys... That Deadpool was a big piece of shit.
You lie.
The only thing I liked about it was Stan Lee as the strip club guy.
Which by the way, he didn't sign on for that. He was actually a little upset that they put him there.
He was just old and confused?
Well, no, they green screened everything.
Oh, he wasn't in that little booth?
No, he wasn't in the little
Cinnamon
booth.
To main stage. He did say that. Like he had to know what he was doing there.
I think he was probably more upset.
Cinnamon's a superhero, Stan.
Probably he's more upset that he wasn't actually at a strip club.
Yeah, I think that was actually what it was.
When we see it, you're going to be in a why the hell am I not there now?
Oh, they should just put the damn dude in Australia. What is he, like 150 years old?
93.
Put him in a strip club. I know, I laughed at that, but everything else, man, I was just like... Maybe if I was 12, I'd enjoy this a little more. Sorry.
That's Deadpool's character, man. You gotta release your inner 12-year-old.
You read the comic book? You
I released that 12-year-old 2 weeks ago. You saw him. He ran like the wind, that kid.
Come on.
Sorry, guys. I'm with you on Captain America. I'm with you on Avengers. I just didn't get Deadpool.
Yeah.
Any jokes about 69 and dildos, I want to be done here in the podcast. Nobody does... 69 jokes like we do.
I liked it.
Has Garrison Keillor ever done any 69 material on Prairie Home Companion?
It was a cold day in August.
Margaret took down her potato dress and swung her fat Idaho thighs over. What the hell? What the hell's a potato dress? It sounds like something they'd wear in like Wobegon, doesn't it?
It's where the sheep come home for the third day.
His calls for help couldn't be heard due to the
Garrison, no!
Garrison, stop drinking that Steel Reserve. Who gave you that?
I met some boys from the Tuesday night cigar.
It was a Tuesday night.
There wasn't anything going was down right at the Rotary Club, so I stumbled into a place called the Corner of No Hope.
We're getting out of the Methodist Church Presbyterian on the Gospel Rock of Zion on Lake Wobegon.
It was the night of the big pumpkin pie bake sale. A young man named Cody Leshker handed me a pint.
That's
of
it. We're
Sierra
not discussing
Nevada
the movie. We're just going to be doing Garrison Keillor horribly all dialogue.
No, we're not. One of the things we brought up with Glenn was that a lone cigar manufacturer, maybe not the hero the premium cigar world wanted, but it was certainly the one they needed.
They got.
1502 cigars. Remember, guys, when we smoked the Emerald back with Halloween 3?
Yes.
Back in October. We loved that cigar. Well, Enrique Sanchez, the guy who founded and runs 1502, is the first guy to file a federal lawsuit against the FDA to protect his company and protect what he's worked for. So we talked a lot with Glenn about that. And in honor of Enrique having the balls, it is ballsy, and it's probably very expensive.
Yeah,
and nobody likes to
Going up against the federal effing government. Nobody, it's going
to
be expensive.
Nobody likes to be the first, and this guy stood up and filed the very first lawsuit to protect his not only his business but his dream, his passion, and to produce a very legal product.
Yeah,
natural product. And in honor of Enrique taking that step and to go along with our talk with Glenn earlier, we are going to smoke Enrique's 1502 Nicaragua cigar.
All right.
It's a Robusto 5x50. It is, imagine this, the Nicaragua is a Nicaraguan Puro. You're going to recognize...
That means all parts come from
everything
Nicaragua
in it comes from Nicaragua. And you guys are going to recognize some of these names from our blending session with James Brown.
Yeah.
It comes from the four main growing regions, Esteli, Jalapa, woo-hoo, Condega, and I believe one of you guys' favorite, Ometepe. Is that Yak Boy was the Ometepe fan?
Yes. Yes, it was. Ometepe. Loved it.
You got some Ometepe in there, which I believe is the volcanic region.
Right. It's the island. It's an island. The lake.
Correct.
So...
which there's an island, a lake. I mean,
there's a volcano on an island, and that's where it comes from. And the tobacco is very limited. I know James said it was harder
hard
and harder to get access to, but that is included here. It also features, if you remember from that episode, if you look at the
closed
cigar
foot or the wrap foot,
the patented cigar lock.
Cigar lock.
That's 1502's claim to fame. The wrapper extends down slightly past. I'm sorry. The wrapper extends down slightly past the binder, and then it curves downward. It's a 1502 exclusive, and its purpose, again, is to protect the wrapper from peeling and breaking, which it's a beautiful wrapper. It's intact. And also, it helps you light the cigar from the outside first to the inside, way a cigar should be lit. We really liked it last time. And then from the first draw, once lit, it should immediately get a full dose of Nicaraguan flavors in your mouth.
I didn't realize... In your mouth!
The doctor style.
No. I don't even know what that means, but he's not here, so let's pick on him.
I didn't realize that was a patent thing, because I thought Skip had like a closed foot one.
Well, no. Lots of cigars have closed foot.
Yeah.
This is just
a partial.
Just overlaps... The wrapper just overlaps to where it burns from the outside, and it does. These things have been kind of knocked around my humidor for... a year or so now. So these suckers are settled, and it's a beautiful intact wrapper, so maybe there's something to that. But that's what we're smoking tonight.
Yeah.
To go with...
So these are brought to us by Kate?
These were submitted to us many moons ago by... I forget the name of the company that... House of Emilio.
House of Emilio.
Who no longer is... now they are Boutiques Unified.
Okay.
Now it's...
Okay, good. Because I thought it was just a name switch. I thought that you were going to say, oh, they heard Tut, and they were like, oh, screw you guys.
Yeah, they heard Tut's bashing them on a couple cigars, and they closed shop. No. They still do, I believe, the AF1s, the AF2.
Love the AF1s.
And
I got the AF2 at Cats Fest.
You liked it.
I did.
I haven't smoked one yet. But they also do Nomad and Black Label.
Okay.
They all fall under that umbrella. And 1502, I believe, still. So.
Nomad as in Fred?
Yes.
All right. When are we going to get the Fred interview up?
Next week.
All right, cool.
I wanted to give it a little bit of space from JD's interview and the new episode today. So next week.
Excellent.
What are we drinking tonight to go with this? I should say I don't know much about the wrapper and the specific. It's just Nicaraguan. I don't have any.
I was about to say, was there anything on the wrapper?
Don't know. It's a lighter shade.
So basically, this has the same tobaccos as the MBK, except with one addition into
one
it.
One addition, but
well, there's always going to be
all sorts of different stuff.
Different styles.
But it's a Puro.
I recognize all three of the tobacco names, so I'm really kind of curious to see and compare how the two blenders do their thing.
It's a really nice light brown shiny wrapper.
It's going to be fun.
Kind of silky. What are we drinking tonight, buddy?
Tonight we are drinking Sierra Nevada's Hop Hunter. This is an American IPA.
Okay.
It's
I like it.
It's fairly new. I would probably say for them, Sierra Nevada originally.
We've only done one other of their beers, correct?
The Hop Torpedo. Yes.
So I thought we actually did another one, but I could be wrong.
Yes. No, the Sierra Nevada is more famous for their pale ale, which has been one of the highest selling beers in the U.S., my most well known of the craft beers. Sierra Nevada themselves, they started back in 1980 in Chico, California. So, and with this IPA, they tried to do something a little different, which I am not familiar. It's even labeled on the bottle. They used hop oil. Never heard of it.
I dab it behind my ears before I enter any dance competition.
It's oil it from wet hop not steam so distilled directly in the field. Oh, excuse me.
Distilling wet hops before it leaves the field.
The steam was
helping
coming
to
off
concentrate
the wet hops.
The normal flavors, the normal things that you would get in the hops.
That's like the barn smoker of like what they do with cigars.
Yeah, really.
With,
the fire
cooking cure. The leaves out in the fields before they go to the rolling. All right.
So it's supposed to collect even more of the intense hop flavor.
You well, know, I love that.
I'm not getting the intense hop flavor because I'm not an IPA guy, and this is. This is good for me.
But now what they're trying here to do, and this was the
it's
same thing that we had. Yeah, it's only 60
IBU.
Yeah. But it's kind of like the Hop Torpedo.
You mean the flavor without the bitter?
Yes.
Okay.
They've accomplished that.
They're good at that.
Yeah, they've accomplished that.
They've been trying to do that because a lot of people, especially, like I said.
Wieners like Tut.
Yeah, pretty much.
Winners like Tut?
Winners,
yes.
I meant.
Yes.
You go out to the West Coast and IPAs are... Not just the rage, they are everything out there.
Yeah.
And
a
lot of people...
They bathe their babies in IPAs.
Yes, it is just a baptism of hop.
Well, I'm liking it on a hot, sweltery...
Good God, it's hot.
...evening where it's hot as balls. It's good. It's hitting the spot. It's going down like
6
nothing.
Point something on the
6.2 ABV. So it's a little bit stronger,
little bit,
but not
too crazy.
Much.
And then 60 IBUs, which is going to.
That means we got to blaze through this show. Otherwise, by the end of it, it'll be like.
That's what we want.
Hey.
That's when he does the big oh my.
Oh my.
You did a lot of those last episode. And I just got a warm and fuzzy feeling every time you did. Granted, that's Stern's thing. You know, he has George Takei on the show. All the
oh,
time.
Does he?
And
I was just equating George Takei with the Japanese.
Yeah, no,
movie.
It fit for this
it was
show,
totally
but
stereotype.
It's not something we can. I really want to call you on to do a lot, but that's his thing. But I'm first couple sips. I'm really liking this beer.
I am
yes.
too.
It's refreshing. It's crisp. There's real strong crispness on the front end. Just enough hops to an IPA guy like myself make me happy. I'm not getting a lot other than just crisp hops, crisps.
Hibbit?
Crisscross?
Hibbit?
Exactly.
Exactly.
And the reason we picked the Hop Hunter was tonight's film.
An excellent film.
Who loves you? And who do you love?
Tuttle!
Yes!
1987's The Running Man. Now, granted, when Tuttle selected this beer, he thought the he thought the guys hunting down Arnold Schwarzenegger's movie were called Hunters. Hence the Hop Hunter.
And I'm embarrassed because this is my second favorite Arnold movie. It's one of my go-to movies.
I've seen like 50 times. And when he told me he got it, I didn't tell him, well, those are Stalkers. He's like, this is the only beer I can find that'll tie in. Like, yeah,
we'll I'm really surprised. And now I understand
I was like, it's fine. And the reason it's fine is, in the book, The Running Man, written by Richard Bachman, which is the pen name of Stephen King, they weren't called Stalkers. They were called Hunters.
Yeah. Which is better, though.
Which is better.
Makes more sense.
Well,
I mean, they are actually hunting.
They're hunting.
I mean, if
right.
they were stalking them, that it would
when
just
you're
be,
stalking,
it'd be more creepy. Like
it's the doctor digging through their mail and reading their phone bills, and you know, smelling like old soup cans in their trash, and that's a whole nother movie.
Now I've just got, and we have an update from the field. Cut to camera two. The doctor has entered the quadrant.
It's like a squirrel, the lights hit him, and he looks up from the garbage can and runs away.
You just really expect to see, like, a bush somewhere, like, just hiding in the bush.
Oh. In her bathroom, putting the lipstick all over his lips. No, this was, I should say, 87, before stalking had the lifetime movie connotation of stalking. This came out in November of 87.
Yeah.
Whereas Predator came out earlier that summer, June of 87.
Wow, I didn't realize it was the same year.
Which, no arguments, makes 1987 the
like
greatest...
Like one of the baddest-ass movie times.
The greatest cinematic year in movie history. We got Running Man and Predator in the same year.
Yeah, it's... In terms of action movies, that's like,
you
that's
know, one and two of my Arnold deals, yeah.
And I saw them both at the theater.
Yeah.
With, you know, adult supervision, and they both... just rocked my collective prepubescent, you know, 87, what, 10, 11?
I think the only time I could say something of, you know, too similar or an actor to be in two movies in one year like that, the only other thing I can think of would be like Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein with Gene Wilder.
Hell Comes to Frogtown and that other movie.
Was They Live in Frogtown the same? Yeah, it was. It was really close. But this beats that. This trumps.
Oh, sure. Gene Wilder over Roddy. Whatever.
Not the same genre.
Arnold,
I mean, it's comedy.
Arnold trumps both those.
And then Arnold, that's action.
Nobody's putting Frogtown over it's Predator.
Kick
there.
You in the face.
But yeah, what a year, huh? And you gotta think about what came like right before and right after it.
Yeah.
There was Red Heat. There was... I think Red Heat was directly after that.
Yeah.
Cocaineum.
Right before it, by just barely, you had Commando. It was, what, 85?
Yeah.
This was the heyday.
This is the Arnold at
Arnold
his
at his peak. Literally, physically and star-wise, this was Arnold at his peak. The film was directed by Paul Michael Glazer. Of Starsky and Hutch fame. Who is he, Starsky or Hutch? He's the dark-haired one. I don't know.
Dark-haired one.
He was the dark-haired one. I don't know.
Punch.
If that's... I don't know if that's...
That was Chips.
Oh.
Starsky and Hutch is before my day, I'll be honest. But he was a TV actor who'd gone into directing. He actually replaced a director, Andrew Davis, who you would know from Under Siege...
Okay,
and The Fugitive.
Yeah.
Good action director. He would go on to work with Arnold, I believe, in Collateral Damage. But he wasn't seen eye to eye with the producers. So literally, they had begun shooting when they brought in Paul Michael Glazer.
Was this at a time where Arnold could pretty much call his shots on directors?
Yes. He had chosen McTiernan.
Right.
Now, granted, he had... voiced his opinion in the process. It wasn't he chose him.
Okay.
But he had seen Nomads and voiced that he thought McTiernan could handle Predator.
Right, right.
And then he had picked, I believe, Andrew Davis. He was not, from what I've read, in favor of bringing Paul Michael Glazer on board.
Okay.
Arnold has always had a really good eye for directors. It's the proof's in the pudding. James Cameron, he has a very good eye for directors. And I think he saw The Running Man as a much bigger visual kind of playground for the right director, and I don't. He didn't see Paul Michael Glazer being that guy. As a matter of fact, I want to say he left production for some reason, and when he came back, the change had been made. And you know, Arnold is a team player. He didn't. He showed up and he did his thing, but he was not happy about it. And I can see that this movie could have been visually much more. There's a lot of cheese in here.
But see, that's what's so weird is that it could have been so much more, but even what it was is still my second favorite Arnold movie of all time.
It's in my top five. Easy.
Easily, yes. But I think, you know, and they did that on purpose because, I mean, maybe part of the subject matter, you know, we got to kind of lighten this up just a little bit.
Those calls in screenplay for the lightening up, Arnold realized before this with Commando and then with Predator, his asset was the one-liner.
Yeah.
Humanizing him through those small comedic moments, he was smart enough to know he needed that.
Right.
Nobody wanted to see him low forehead, barrel his way serious through a movie. He saw the results with Commando and Predator. Those moments of levity is what brought females. That's why when they would get the ratings from the movies, females would rank... They would love the stuff because of the comedy.
Yeah.
So he insisted, and this is prime example of the one-liners being inserted in the movie, which leads me to the screenplay. Much more important than who directed it. Stephen E. D'Souza wrote the screenplay. I'm going to list some other things he wrote, which you may have heard of. Commando.
Yep.
Die Hard.
Yep.
Die Hard 2.
Yep.
Hudson Hawk.
Yep.
48 Hours.
Yep.
Another 48 Hours.
Yep.
Judge Dredd.
Yep.
And
Stallone version? Yep.
The guy is 80s action movies. Good 80s action
movies. I was
about
to say, this dude's like got blockbuster.
This guy gets it. He also wrote like Street Fighter, a lot of the Von Damme movies, which I don't...
We'll give him a pass on the Von Damme.
I'm not going to waste anybody's time talking about those.
Oh, come on. Bloodsport was pretty good.
But Stephen E. D'Souza is on record. I'm a big fan of his writing, obviously, because I'm a big fan of all these movies. But he knew how to write a Schwarzenegger film.
Yeah.
He knew how to insert that one-liner. And whatever technical and visionary deficiencies the director switch to this TV actor did. And I'm not going to just totally discard Paul Michael Glazer. It's a good, fun movie. He put together a movie that we love. But it's Stephen E. D'Souza's script that... you know, you remember the lines, you remember the dialogue, especially with the villain and Arnold. So that's the repertoire company behind this thing, which is good. First impressions of the cigars before we...
I'm too drunk to taste this cigar.
One beer.
I've had three. No, it's...
Really nice spice off the light that immediately disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, this wrapper, I wish I had some information on what it is. It's a gorgeous wrapper.
It really
is.
It's
burning beautifully. I'm getting just...
I'm going to say I'm getting really strong kind of...
Cedar?
I would say cedar, but I'm picking up really a lot more like the earthy... flavors. I won't say cedar. I can't say that I'm picking that up. But I like I said, you know, right there off the bat, I picked up that hint of spice. Maybe it's in conjunction with the beer right now, but I'm kind of picking up a sweetness.
Yeah, it is a sweet cigar. Well, I don't know. That you're right. That might be beer flavoring.
So, and, you know, and that's why I'm like, you know, is that because, I mean, the beer is very floral.
No, there is an underlying sweetness to it.
Okay.
I'm not getting the earthiness. I'm getting a kind of a cedar with some sweetness to it. It's very tasty.
Yeah, it actually is. And I like the smoke. The construction on it is beautiful. It's an easy smoking cigar.
This 1502, whatever the guy Enrique is doing as far as construction and in his factory, I can see why he's fighting tooth and nail to keep it going. Because they're gorgeous. The Emerald 2 was a gorgeous cigar. It burns
beautifully. And a great construction.
And so far,
on
this
it,
is too. But yeah, I think we're in agreement in online sweetness. You're getting some earthy things. I'm getting a little bit of cedar. I'm literally centimeters into this, and Tut's not even an inch, so I'll get back to it. So far, it's It's so hot, I'm just sucking this beer down.
I was about to say, yeah, it's...
Which, isn't that what beer's for?
It is. Yes, like, it
I'm
is.
I'm not going to apologize for it.
It is
Am I in some kind of trouble here?
You probably need a lawyer.
Don't you dare judge me. Do not judge me.
No, there will be no talk of lawyers tonight. Dude, we literally dropped that like 1,000 times last episode. And each time it was funnier than this. Each time it was funnier than the other
time. Am I in trouble here?
But the beer is delicious.
It really And, it is perfect for tonight.
It is not bitter at all to the point where I'm worried about it.
But it's flavorful. I mean, it's really flavorful.
I'm going to be honest, this especially every time, you know, someone especially says an IPA, especially West Coast, I think, you know, maybe Sierra Nevada has realized, especially, you know, they are with the last, I mean, like I said, the last one we did was the Hop Torpedo.
Did you throw the W off the West Coast?
IPA, baby? Ride till we die.
Are we in a gang now?
IPAs in my belly just multiply.
Did we do something wrong?
No, sorry. Sorry. Let it go, man. Let it go.
Are you getting kind of a citrus?
Yeah.
A little bit of citrus now that I'm in my second one. I'm getting a little bit of...
But I don't know if that's beer or the combination of beer and cigar.
That's totally beer. I'm picking up a ton of citrus. Okay.
Yeah, some orange.
Oh, yes.
That's good.
Very good.
Man. Well, I'll come back to the cigar here in a little bit. We just started. As the TriStar horse... What's it called? A horse with wings?
Pegasus.
Pegasus.
Man.
Dun, 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 dun.
Just that opening dun, logo dun, brings dun,
that dun, logo dun. Right there. If there
nostalgia,
you can't beat that.
You can't beat it.
The only one that comes close is that old Vestron video.
Oh, the Vestron's good. The Vestron's real good. I like personally Avco Embassy. They did a lot of the early Carpenter films, Escape from New York and The Fog. Those early just logos, but TriStar was on all the big stuff we watched.
Yes.
After It Fades Away, a red screen pops up with. We got to read for a while.
Yeah.
But it's important stuff.
It's important.
We got to set it up.
And it starts out with something we should all very much take into account. 2017 is when this movie takes place.
Which is kind of wild.
And the sad thing is there's a lot of shit in this movie in 2017 that they thought we'd still be able to do that you can't do anymore.
Very true.
Anyway, we'll get to that. All right, here's what it says. This is important. By 2017, the world economy has collapsed. Food, natural resources, and oil are in short supply. A police state divided into paramilitary zones rules with an iron hand. Television is controlled by the state, and a sadistic game show called The Running Man has become the most popular program in history. All art, music, and communications are censored. No dissent is tolerated, and yet a small resistance movement has managed to survive underground. When high-tech gladiators are not enough to suppress the people's yearning for freedom, more direct methods become necessary. That's our introduction to the film.
Thank you, 911-er.
You know what? Make my brain numb 3 days out of the week with college and pro football. And I become kind of satiated and not noticing freedoms being taken away.
It's the Huxley effect. Huxley said that we
would
be...
All my yearnings seem to fade away when I'm satiated by guys hitting each other with... Helmets and pads.
It's what Huxley feared, is that we would kind of allow an authoritarian presence to come in because we're so distracted by our distractions. We're distracted by the internet, reality TV shows, sports shows, game shows.
D.L. Huxley? He had a show on the WB?
No, that's not D.L. Huxley.
Oh.
Aldous.
I know, I'm just teasing.
It was Huxley Hart.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about that because that plays in a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm getting ahead of myself on the analogy of mainstream America being just on their couches 3 days a week during football season.
Yeah.
This movie really plays on that.
Yeah.
They're betting
FanDuel,
and you don't think about shit for 3 days. And a lot of stuff is going on while you're watching that screen. But, again, we're all getting ahead of ourselves. Just calm down, boys. Take a breath. While we were reading the title cards, we're listening to the amazing synth score of the one and only Harold Faltermeyer.
Yeah.
We loved his work previously on the show on Tango and Cash. Mm-hmm. This guy is the king of 80s synth scores.
And the inspiration for modern new retro wave.
Very much so. He and Carpenter are, and Tangerine Dream are kind of the three synth gods. Evangelist too.
Yeah.
But you know Harold Faltermeyer from Fletch, Beverly Hills Cop, Top Gun. But to me, this is his my favorite score of his.
Yeah.
Probably because it's the most Carpenter-esque.
Yeah.
It's
very Carpenter-esque. It is.
But I love this score.
And yeah.
I own pretty much all the Arnold scores, and this is one I listen to quite a bit. It's just a really fun, but a very... Man, it just fits the movie to a T.
Yeah, it really does. It does not distract from the movie at all.
Well, we now join a police helicopter piloted by Ben Richards, a.k.a. Arnold Schwarzenegger, our hero. as it flies over a food riot in progress in the city of Bakersfield, California. Made me realize, same year, 87, both Predator and Running Man start with a chopper scene. Which, for you loyal listeners out there, we do have a short film project that we're working on. It just solidified we need to get a helicopter.
We have to get a helicopter.
Anyone has a helicopter.
If anyone can help us get a fucking helicopter.
A side of a helicopter.
It doesn't have to fly. We just need it on the ground. But we need a helicopter. And this hit at home. We're like, if we start off in a helicopter, we'll succeed because...
All the good ones. Cool. Movies are cool that start with helicopters.
It's exactly why Big Trouble in Little China was such a hit, is because anything with helicopters and 18-wheelers automatically goes up 10 points.
Yeah. Well, I can get us an 18-wheeler, but we don't want to do that.
What?
For what we're doing, an 18-wheeler won't work.
No, absolutely not.
But we need one, goddammit. We got to find a helicopter. So listeners, help us if you can get us one. So the chopper has these really cool video screens that are straight out of Escape from New York that kind of survey the...
Oh, good old 80s CGI, below. Man.
And they tell Richards, Arnold Schwarzenegger, that he's the pilot, that there's about 1,500 unarmed people down below in this riot.
Food riot in progress.
When he relays this intel back to HQ, that's headquarters to you common folks, and intel is intelligence.
Me.
I'm going to stop talking in code because I don't want to lose it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't want to lose it. Is that what we were doing?
We can...
Get another hop.
Bring another round.
When he relays this intel back to HQ, they tell him to proceed with... Was it Plan Alpha?
Which, for Plan Alpha,
he doesn't know anything about it.
It's like, what?
Proceed with Plan Alpha, kill everybody.
Wait,
what?
Isn't the Alpha designation like the first and only plan?
Shouldn't I have heard about it if it's Plan Alpha? Well, they say proceed.
I will not fire on innocent women and children.
Proceed with Plan Alpha, kill everything that moves. And he's like, I will not fire on innocent women and children. Like, Richards, go with the orders. He's like, I won't do it. So all of a sudden, the other cops in the helicopter just start beating the shit out of him. They yank him out. He starts knocking out dudes.
It was actually a pretty sweet thing. The one, like, the pilot next to him, like, oh, wait, I have to stop. He just gives him a fist.
I love that he does the classic Arnold backhand
with the back of the fist. Before the end of the night, I'm doing that to Cody.
Wait.
No, pretend I didn't say that.
I
wanted to be surprised.
Yeah, damn it. Okay, I'll do it first, and then you come back in with it. Don't worry, Cody. It's my left hand, so it'll be far weak. It'll be like a gnat sting.
Why are you hitting me?
You stun him, and then when he comes over... But I'll have to do it this way. It'll be all awkward. It'll be like when we were trying to catch that bug in here last episode. Just a bunch of wild limbs. Well, they start trying to wrestle. And they finally get him down to the ground, this helicopter. And they're like, Richards, you're going to fry for this.
And they hit him with the butt of a gun.
Take a butt of the gun, which I think that's how he got knocked out in Commando, too, when he got captured.
In the 80s, that's how you got and knocked
out.
And
I think even the same line, somebody's like, I'll see you in hell.
Curse.
You got to say that if you're going to hit a guy with the butt of a gun, I guess. So they knock his ass out. And we cut to 18 months later, where Richards is now being detained at a work camp prison / steel mill. You know it's 18 years or 18 months because he's got a straggly beard now and tattered clothes. But unlike all these other famished prisoners, he's ripped. He's been getting his protein. He's bigger than he was in the helicopter. He's just massive.
He's been on the wheel of woe.
I'm fairly certain that he's probably been like, you know, even though he was Mr. Good Guy, he's over there like, give me your food.
All right, now here's the funny
taking Weiss's mashed potatoes.
All right, now here's the funny thing is that we
We're laughing about Arnold being in this pristine bodybuilding shape on Running Man when he's supposed to be like straggly and scrappy.
Yeah, this remember, place is like Auschwitz.
Remember in Terminator Genesis when we were just shitting all over what's his name for being like
oh,
all
for Kyle Reese for being ripped yeah. in the. But now we love it.
Yeah, that's different. That guy was an asshole.
It's Arnold. But it is true. They started off showing this one guy's cheeks are so sunken in
they're
from
God,
malnourishment. Then Arnold comes in carrying a steel beam. Just I'm sorry, but even
he's been taking everybody's 18, portions.
18. That's what I really think he was stealing everybody's mashed potatoes.
That poor guy over there was like, there he goes. He took my potatoes. I'm so hungry.
I haven't had meatloaf in 3 days. There he is.
I have to carry this incredibly heavy steel beam. What are you doing? I'm starving.
The guards make small talk as they these prisoners are dropping dead right and left. They're throwing them in wheelbarrows, and as they're taking up, all the prisoners wear these electronic collars that can blow their heads off if they try to escape. And as the guards are, these military policemen are removing them, they're talking about last night's Running Man episode.
Yeah.
Everybody watches the Running Man.
It was the most popular show
in history.
In history.
In history. It was like American Idol of 2017. While one of the guards types in
Isn't that canceled?
They just had their last season, I believe.
Oh. So it's not like American Idol.
But for a while there, it was the biggest show.
It's like The Bachelor.
No, it's nothing like The Bachelor.
Oh, okay.
What's the biggest TV
Unless we're
going
to refer to the people on The Bachelor pursuing the other one as stalkers. Which they
actually do.
Are.
No, Chad.
They are stalkers.
Tune into our side podcast.
I was running through the mansion.
Tuttle and I do a side podcast where we talk about The Bachelorette.
Well, they do kind of do recaps on last season's winners.
Last season's losers. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
That's enough about The Bachelorette. I will literally talk about nothing all night but The Bachelorette if you get me started. Don't get me sidetracked. Especially now that I have this delicious elixir in front of me. I can get easily sidetracked.
Oh, you already are being sidetracked. You want to talk about it right now. I see it in your eyes.
Chad is so awesome.
God.
He also has bulging biceps, but not nearly. You know what? On the last Bachelorette, they're like, there's Chad, 270 pounds. I'm like, bullshit, he's not 270. He wishes. Maybe 215.
Yeah, he's a good 220 at best.
220 at best. 270 my ass.
Now all of a sudden we get that comment on our Facebook channel. Don't think I won't show up after
don't think
the show.
Don't think I don't know where the corner of no hope is. I will find you fuckers. I'm more scared of him than the Yakuza from last episode. Sorry, Chad. We're pro-Chad. Tuesday Night Cigar Club is pro-Chad.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I will disagree with you vehemently.
Well, you still have a thing about those hanging Chads out in Florida.
No.
Well, one of the guards... Let's get back on focus. I'm sorry. Let's get back on focus. Well, one of the guards... could be one of those nights. Isn't
it? Yeah, it totally is.
Well, one of the guards types in the perimeter deactivation code.
Well, everybody's
whenever they wheel these wheelbarrows of dead bodies out, there's a force field around the prison, and they have to deactivate the perimeter. So he types it in this big Commodore computer, like... doot, and it's like a screen where like the numbers show...
Maybe we should not have this where the other prisoners can
well,
see
or
it.
We should not put it on a giant screen that people can read literally 100 yards away.
A prisoner named Weiss discreetly spies on him and gets the code. I'm kidding. There's no discreet. He walks right up to him and looks over his shoulder.
Hey, what are you doing? You entering some codes code. There?
And the guy's like, get out of here, convict. He's like, oh, sorry. Hold on.
What was that last one?
6:40. Okay,
By the way, I totally, much like we do, like we try to figure out who the Miranda is of the group, I am totally the Weiss of the group.
You got to work on your self-image, man. The Weiss of the group?
I'm the Weiss of the group.
Who are you? The Laughlin?
Oh, God, am I Laughlin? Oh, no.
Yeah. Cody's the Captain Freedom.
Oh, I would totally.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Sorry.
Anyway, he types it, and then Weiss just walks up and sees the code. And so once Weiss gives the other guys the signal, Arnold drops the massive steel beam he's carrying and punches Yaphet Kotto in the jaw.
It's go time.
Yaphet plays Laughlin. Of course, we know Yaphet, Alien, Live and Let Die.
Yes.
A ton of blaxploitation films. I love this guy. He's just a great screen presence.
Yeah.
I always
he's got those great eyes that just kind of instantly set him out.
I love seeing the FX Coda on screen. But they start fighting this staged fight, and their brawl sparks mass chaos in the prison. Everyone starts rioting. The guards start shooting everybody.
It's like the entire prison knew that at the moment it was started,
but I think that
to go shit
but
crazy.
They kind of did a good job of that made sense. Like once they started slugging it out and everything, everyone just started going crazy. And in that craziness, disarming the guards, shooting the guards. This was orchestrated. This was a long time coming. Everyone starts rioting. The guards start shooting everybody, but they're outnumbered and the prisoners overpower them. We get our first Arnold one-liner here. He ends up back on his balcony, and he grabs a guard by the crotch, and he picks him up over his head, give you a lift, throws him, you know, and they have that from Commando on, every Arnold movie, they use that same sound effect whenever he tosses a dude off. Which I'm pretty sure nobody would ever make that sound. Like, if I picked you up right now and threw you, you wouldn't make that sound.
Yeah, but isn't that that's the standard, like, movie scream.
But Arnold's movie, I've watched enough where I'm like, oh, there it is. Everybody he picks up and throws makes that.
Next time we do the situation confrontation, the quotation with the
That'll
Arnold fans,
it.
Just do that.
All right. Are you ready, Ryan? Running Man, Steel Mills. Ah, damn it. Before Weiss can fully deactivate the perimeter, though, one poor bastard named Chico just can't wait any longer.
Come on, Chico. He's entering the code.
Just a few minutes. Just give the guy a few minutes to enter the code. He can't do it. So he runs past the security markers, and his head fucking blows off the neck. Like a full-blown head squib.
Yeah, it was like Wild Zero's headshot.
It's graphic. It's a whole head explode. And I remember as a kid just thinking, that is awesome.
It
was so awesome.
Was classic.
It was brutal. I mean, it was really gross.
You know what you just love is you see the little body, and then he goes... Boop. And that little body just kind of keeps going, and it just falls down.
And then they show the dummy body on the ground with like a neck stump picket, you know, and literally like 2 seconds later, Weiss gets the code deactivated.
Yeah, it's like, come on,
and
man.
Everyone can run away free. Later that night in the ghetto of Los Angeles, I say ghetto, but even though
brings me to question: how were these sensors made? Because couldn't somebody come on and then just turn them back on if they weren't within that perimeter?
Well, nowadays with like Bluetooth and...
Well, and I have to ask the question because you see the sensor, it's like a line.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, what if you knocked over one of the things?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, is it like a laser grid fit thing? Or is it, if you knock over like one of the two, it's like, wait a second.
Dude,
all we got to do is knock them over?
Man, we're totally busting out of 2017 prison.
They could have used you.
I mean, because if it's the concept of the laser grid, they literally just... You know, hey guys, I just realized something. We could have removed any one of those fence posts, and we could have left this whole time. Damn it, Weiss! What were you thinking?
Well, I mean, Weiss had glasses. That's how we knew he was smart. But I mean, we don't know his background. He didn't have engineering degree.
But he had glasses.
He had those glasses, though. You knew.
But even in prison, of course, he has two perfectly functioning. I mean, it'd be better if he only had like one.
Oh, dude, if he had a monocle, then he'd be like, he's really smart. He got the last engineering degree before the government came in and shut down the universities. How do you know? Look at that eyepiece.
Oh,
good God, that's beautiful. No, we don't know. These guys are all just raised in the gutters from what they kind of do.
Yeah.
But we go that night to the ghetto of Los Angeles. And even though, you know, I say ghetto, even though the poor folks are living in makeshift tents and shacks, the government has placed these huge flat-screen TVs everywhere. Yeah. In the ghetto, on the street corners. Like, everywhere you look, there's a flat-screen. Now, keep in mind, this is way before flat-screen TVs.
Yeah, yeah.
So they got that right. There's these huge, beautiful flat-screen TVs.
Oh, you know, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
These aren't big tube TVs up there. These are, and they play 24/7, nonstop network feed, game shows.
Yeah. Which the networks are controlled by the state. It's basically a state message.
Keeping everybody satiated and brainwashed with mindless programming. And it never ends. They're playing clips from the number one game show, The Running Man.
Yep.
We join Richards, Weiss, and Laughlin as they meet up with Stevie, played by Dweezil Zappa, Frank Zappa's son. who takes them to a resistance leader named Mick, played by Mick Fleetwood, who has the tools and the skills needed to remove. They still have their explosive neck collars on. While Laughlin watches one of the screens as he's getting his Mick's taking his necklace off, he bemoans that the TVs play nonstop all day, all night, and the network has gone so far as the TV network has gone so far as to shut down all the schools. The kids now are either in basic training or getting brainwashed. That's your two options. Weiss and Mick say if they can just find the uplink tower where all this is being broadcast from and the code, the uplink code, they can bring it all down. Which they sound like a bunch of crazy people at this point. They're in a shack wanting to bring down the this all-powerful government.
Hey, revolutions are started that way.
Well, we'll learn that they can end them. It's a good story of hope and promise. After Laughlin's collar has been removed and disposed of, Richard's plops
just got
down
on every like government watch list there is from that comment.
Oh, dude, we've been on that watch list since episode 3, I think.
Well,
up the creek got us on like 5 watch lists.
Most of the times they're going, have you seen the amount of alcohol they drink? They're not a threat.
We're like the Avengers of, like, we need to register as, like, super people because, like, my God, they drink so much and
they're mutants.
We are mutants.
Well,
just about.
They would be immune to any of the drugs we would give them. We were fools to make it alcohol-based.
Would you guys sign up with the mutant drunk registry? Or would you fight it?
Now, if Captain America, not in Hydra, if Captain America is against it, I'm against it.
Just blindly follow Captain America?
No, I wouldn't blindly follow anybody.
You said if he was for it, I'd do it.
Well, after a well-reasoned argument, some discussion.
I'm not signing
that. That simply
shit
follows in, he walks in and goes, hi, I'm Captain America.
Okay.
Dude, whatever you say, dude.
If it was the real Captain America and he walked in, he's like, Kate, I think you should come with me, and I'd probably look into those icy steel blue eyes and be like, all right.
He was pretty convincing.
Right? I'll be like the winter drinker.
He's gone rogue.
After Laughlin's collar has been removed and disposed of, Richard sits down for his turn. Mick hesitates because he believes Richards to be what the media said, the butcher of Bakersfield. He slaughtered all those food rioters. And on top of that, he's just like all the other cops who took away his friends, burned his music, and turned this country into a jail. We have a very big prison problem in this country. It's another thing this movie gets right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Arnold sits there calmly, chewing on his stogie. Somehow, somebody gave him a stogie. As they all argue over his fate.
He's not certain he stole it from some of it. It's like he stole everybody else's food in prison. He kept that huge physique.
Dweezil Zapp was like, be keeping the cigar just for the...
now it's my cigar.
Well, they're all talking about killing him, and he's a traitor, and he's a mole, and he just sit there, and he lights up. Cool shot of him lighting the match on the chair, and he lights it up. And he tells him, you know what? All I see here are a bunch of big talkers. A bunch of low foreheads. Talk and
dreams.
Big dreams. Whenever you're ready to act, let me know. Otherwise, shut the hell up.
I'm not sure what a low forehead means.
I don't know. I use it a lot, though. I've been using that one for years.
I think he's just saying some bunch of fucking idiots.
But that's an Arnold line. He says that like in his real life. Like Arnold's, that's one of his big insults he gives to people when he calls them a low forehead.
Just not really sure.
Yeah, I call you guys that all the time behind your back.
No, you actually sent that in a text.
Did I?
I think you did.
Listen up, you low foreheads. You guys have high foreheads, you know. Well, Mick respects Arnold.
It's just one forehead.
I have an endless forehead, Dave. I don't know where it stops, where it starts. All I see are a bunch of endless foreheads. Well, Mick respects Arnold's candor, Richard's candor. It's nothing worth losing your head over, and he graciously takes off his explosive neck collar. They tried, actually, then to get him to join the resistance. But it's not his style. He just wants to go get out of there, live his life. He hops on a truck full of illegal immigrant construction workers. topical. And that's that. He rides off into the sunset. The next morning, we find ourselves at the ICS headquarters. It's the network that shows Running Man.
Yeah.
Do we ever learn what ICS stands for? I never see it other than just the acronym. The acronym. Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's a huge skyscraper where the host of the Running Man has arrived in his limo, and he's greeted by a mob of crazy fans. His name is Damon Killian, and he's played by the one and the only, Richard Dawson of The Family Feud.
Oh, cannot go on enough about his awesomeness.
Kudos to the casting director.
We're actually going to talk about the casting director. Casting directors never get shout-outs.
No.
This, in my opinion, is one of the, if not the, biggest masterstrokes of casting in film history.
I was about to say, there's this and Bone Tomahawk.
But that was just an actor, a character actor, giving a... You're talking about...
I'm talking about all of them, except for the chick.
Yeah, but those were all really great actors that just stepped up and did really great performances.
Oh, so these are like, you're saying because these are nobodies because and non-actors.
This casting director pulled out Richard Dawson, Mick Fleetwood, like weird stuff out of nowhere. And when I tell you a little bit about the casting director, you're going to be like, holy shit, this chick is, like, some of the cast she's pulled together over the years, like, this chick is magic.
Yeah.
This woman, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be flipping about it. I've had a couple IPAs. But like I said, between Mick Fleetwood, Richard Dawson, later we'll have Jim Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, this she just went for the most interesting, crazy choices ever, and it paid off in spades. Oh, my God. This is just some really inspired shit. Nobody, like I said, nobody ever mentions the casting director when dishing out praise, but that all changes tonight. Jackie Birch, I salute you. Jackie Birch is the casting director. She also did Predator, put together that team.
Mm-hmm.
Commando, okay. Which makes sense because there's a lot of reoccurring people from Predator and Commando in this. Die Hard.
Yeah.
She found Hans Gruber. 16 Candles, she found Long Duk Dong.
Oh, God.
One of the greatest, not so much for us, but you'll meld at the knees of this. She's the one that put together the cast of The Breakfast Club.
Okay. Yeah, this woman is winner.
Weird science she's responsible for. She found Chet.
Oh.
Three Amigos.
Oh, good God.
Roadhouse.
Oh,
man. I'm starting to sound like James Lipton at Roadhouse.
I am now in love with this person.
Ford Fairlane, a personal favorite of mine.
Oh.
Hot Shots?
You can just stop. I have an erection.
The list goes on. Jackie Birch. All these movies we love.
Casting director extraordinaire.
Fuck yeah. All these movies we love would never be anything on a radar without her putting the people in the place.
Nah, yeah.
Especially 16 Candles. Especially Predator. You know, she probably found Sonny Landon.
Yeah, the cast stuff is
Die Hard. If she found Hans Gruber, she, by casting in this movie Jim Brown, an athlete, by casting Jesse Ventura, I'm guessing she casted Alexander Gudahoff in Die Hard?
Yeah.
The ballet?
Yeah.
That had to be her call. This is a chick who thinks out of the box, crazy casting ideas.
Yeah.
Making a movie, I'm getting Jackie Birch on board, man.
I mean, because whatever, obviously, she could just walk. You're going to put so-and-so in this movie. Well, that's not the tone of this. You're putting so-and-so.
I've got an Iranian ISIS crossbreed terrorist, big-time Muslim. He's coming to America, and he's going to blow up Peyton Manning.
What?
Peyton Manning. Okay.
Let's do it.
You're Jackie Birch.
Yeah, Ms. Birch sold me to it.
I don't know. I do. Whatever she tells me, her track record is undeniable. It's in there. All right.
Are you sure?
It's in there. Doing a biopic. Oh, yeah? Yeah. It's Thomas Jefferson. I want to do, you know, when he had the kite and the electricity. I like what you're doing, Matt. I like what you're doing. I got some ideas. Oh, yeah? Well, what you got? Bob Costas. Don't say no. Bob fucking Costas. Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. You ever see that little tortoise bastard? Little turtle guy with the spiked hair? He's your Thomas Jefferson. Okay.
Let's do it.
But yeah, I just want to give her a shout out because,
yeah,
I mean,
good.
My God.
Worthwhile.
Anywho, Richard Dawson is absolutely brilliant in the role of Killian. As he's walking to the elevator in Ellery, did I just call Guy Fieri a turtle?
You did.
He kind of looks like a turtle.
He does.
As Killian's walking to the elevator, an elderly janitor is kind of just blindly going around mopping, and he sticks the mop in front of Killian. And even though he doesn't trip, he stops and he pats the guy in the bag. He's like,
Hey.
I'm sorry, Mr. Killian, old Ben. You know, he's been there for 50 years. Like, oh, no problem. And then you really get a sense for who this guy is. Before the elevator doors close, he turns to his assistant, Brenda, and is like, if he's mopping floors tomorrow, you're going to be mopping him for a week. And he's like, all right, this guy's got it going on. He's got a little Miami Vice, kind of gray pinstripe suit. Also, always by Killian's side is a giant bodyguard, a massive man, played by Sven Ole Thorsen.
Oh. Sven.
One of Arnold's longtime best friends. He was in his wedding, one of his groomsmen. Yeah. A lot of people think they're cousins. They're not. They're not related. Yeah. He was in Conan. He was in Predator.
He was in everything.
He's just about in everything.
He's been
yeah.
in just so much. Red Heat. But he's just in a shit ton of Arnold movies, but he plays Killian's bodyguard. Richards has now made his way into the city, and he sneaks into his brother's apartment. Did you notice when he was walking into the apartment complex? He's a massive dude. He's wearing like a construction worker's outfit with a hard hat and a bunch. But he's smoking his giant stogie, which nowadays, in 2016, that's going to draw attention to you in a crowded place. So they really got the smoking part wrong in this movie.
Yes, they did.
And I'm going to get to that a little bit because they light up cigarettes, all sorts of indoor like businesses, and like they missed that one completely. Like that's a target that. But he finds his brother's apartment. Only it's not his brother's apartment anymore. It's Maria Conchita Alonso's apartment. And when she gets home from work, the first thing she does is turn on the TV to Captain Freedom's Workout.
Captain Freedom.
Are you ready for pain?
Are you ready for suffering? Then you're ready for the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. Oh, yeah. It's an exercise show led by Captain Freedom, who's one of the running man stalker hunters.
Yeah, retired.
Retired now,
stalker.
So he does this daily exercise show where he wears this kind of purple and blue unitard and orders this legion of women in matching unitards into kicking. I don't know sure what the exercising is like.
It's like this weird.
They're just kind of kicking and like moving their arms, and it's very comical and very funny.
Oh, I love it. My favorite deal is when he does the slider like pose and kicks his head back.
It's so good.
Played by Jesse
the Body Ventura.
Back before he did, before he went apeshit crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. After talking to Glenn tonight, I think Jesse might be onto some things. It is, and it, you know, obviously Jesse just starred with Arnold and Predator.
Yeah,
they were friends. Arnold's always been a big wrestling fan. He's in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame.
I think you can tell a lot about people if they're wrestling fans. It's kind of like cigar smokers. You meet somebody and they're a wrestling fan. It's kind of a, you have an instant kind of thing. Same with cigar smokers. We're all wrestling fans, old school wrestling fans. But man, Jesse, I don't think he got a fair shake on the big screen. He had two knockout performances in this and Predator, and then nothing really.
Did what was it, Hot Rod or whatever?
He had the TV show with
pilot
Roddy Piper tag team.
Tag team, was that before or after this?
That was before. That was before. I'm pretty sure that was before. But he's just so good in this as the retired.
I wonder if he's just like so boisterous and you know kind of got a big head and was a little tough to deal with.
I could definitely see him being difficult to deal with. But she starts watching the exercise show and she's exercising. But before Amber That's her character's name, Maria. Maria Conchita Alonso was one of those 80s actresses you saw in a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Colors.
Yeah.
She's in Predator 2, to keep it in the family.
Yeah.
Really good actress. I always like her on screen.
Yeah.
But before she can work up a sweat to Captain Freedom, she's interrupted by a news flash announcing the jailbreak of mass murderer Ben Richards, the butcher of Bakersfield. As she's watching the newscast, a now clean-shaven and showered Richards appears over her and puts his hand over her mouth, telling her to shut up, wants to know where his brother is. She calms down, and she tells him that she was only told that the last tenant, his brother, was taken away last month for re-education. As Richards kind of wraps his head around this, she escapes, and he chases her around the room, declaring his innocence. I was set up! You know, taking people away from re-education sounds like something I could hear Trump say.
Exit, yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
This movie just hit home, man. Hit home on a lot of stuff.
I was about to say, we can go bipartisan with this because you can go to your leftist anger management courses. Not that I've ever been in anger management.
Well, if they did, you failed. You're so angry.
No, they worked. I've gone from angry to just smarmy now.
Do they have any smarmy courses we can send you to?
Do you know someone who's full of smarm?
Yes.
Are you ready for smarm?
Are you ready for sass?
Are you ready for disgruntled unhappiness?
Then you're ready for Captain Tuttle's workout.
You're ready for Tuttle Duchesne's workout.
You've been Duchesne.
You've been Duchesne. Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't have a mouthful of beer at that point.
Back at ICS headquarters, Killian's producers, led by no-holds-barred bad guy Kurt Fuller,
man. Love this dude.
Are showing him a bunch of potential contestants for the Running Man. You see, Killian gets his contestants from state prison, so it's a hodgepodge kind of low-level criminals. My favorite was Motto Babyface March, who's actually a two-year-old. They showed on the screen. It was like an infant. And I think Killian was like, give me a break. Like, it was a baby. If I ever get to that band I've been wanting to get together, that's our name. Motto Babyface. Well, Killian's not seeing anything he likes until he sees video images from the next room. The news is on.
Yeah.
And he sees video images of Richards escaping from prison in the next room. His eyes light up, but Brenda tells him there's no way they can get him. He's a military prisoner. But Killian isn't discouraged. He picks up the phone. And he says, give me the president's entertainment agent.
And before we go on, I don't think that we can actually overstate. It's easy to see Killian in the game show setting because that's what we grew up with. We grew up with seeing him in that setting with Family Feud. But where he really shines is these behind-the-scenes moments where he has dialogue. He has to do expressions. He has to do interaction with other actors.
There's some subtle stuff
going
on with him.
And this guy fucking kills it.
He really does kill it.
And that's the thing. It doesn't feel like he's reading dialogue.
No, exactly.
It sounds like he's just really talking.
The stuff with him in the audience and doing the game show stuff, that's second nature to him at this point. The stuff he pulls in the producers group behind the scenes.
Right. Well, you know, you see him like
the guy
had talent,
man.
He's looking through that window at that next screen. Everyone's talking to him, but he's like he just goes over there and he puts down the thing. And you see him, hello, beautiful.
But it's in his eyes. You can see it in his eyes.
At the same time, I just realized that. Well, don't you think they had producers meeting behind Family Feud and all this other stuff? Which is true.
I'm thinking he's projecting that out there.
It's that shit that's in his eyes. I mean, it's those looks that he carries, the confidence that he carries, the ego that he carries. It's just a brilliant job on this
dude's
part.
It's so brilliant. Like, in my world, you know, I don't watch the Oscars because the guys that I think should get Oscars never do. They don't get nominated.
Right.
In my mind, the two biggest snubs for Oscars in my lifetime were Val Kilmer for Doc Holliday and Tombstone.
Okay.
How he didn't get a Best Supporting Actor nomination.
Right.
That's what made like our Oscars don't mean anything, because that guy was...
Yeah.
And fucking Richard Dawson, The Running Man.
Yeah. And Arnold Schwarzenegger from Maggie. And Home Dude from Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah. What's...
Maybe he wasn't that good if we can't remember him. Damn you, Sierra Nevada.
Not only do I not remember his characters now, I don't remember his name. Richard Jenkins.
There you go.
Boom.
Yeah, I agree with all four of those, and especially like Richard Dawkins. Richard Dawkins.
Oh. Went there.
Damn you, Hop Oil.
Damn you, Asani. That was he did such a masterful job on this and got no credit for it.
No,
whatsoever.
I don't remember anybody even like. No, granted, I was a kid, but
yeah.
You know, if I went back and read reviews, I bet they'd be all smarmy, tut style, like Dawson does his best Dawson impression, and it's nothing to. No, man, he was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, he was. It was, even if he wasn't brilliant, if he wasn't brilliant, then that speaks to the casting.
The only reason
more.
They would probably say, like, we're not going to give it to him. Why? Because he's being himself.
Well, some of the best acting is just ignoring the cameras and finding the center and being yourself.
Yeah.
That's my biggest thing as a director.
I'm just amazed. It's one
quit
thing.
Trying to act.
Well, it's one
find
thing.
Find something in there that's you and just be it.
It's one thing to sit there, you know, and I'm like, well, he's gone through the back producer meetings. He's done the show. It's one thing to go on a professional level and do all that stuff with non-actors and people that are paid by the studio. It's totally different when the camera's on and you're interacting with other actors.
Well, I don't know if you guys read into this or not. They actually shot 2 weeks of this movie. Excuse me. They went ahead with the original director. They shot 2 weeks of this movie with Chuck Woolery of Love Connection as the host.
Oh, yeah?
And oh, that would be horrible.
I'm joking. Of course they didn't do that. Schmucks.
I didn't know.
He's like, oh, we'll be back to The Running Man. 2-2. Right back at you.
So no. Now we're low foreheads.
Bunch of low foreheads. Bob Barker actually played Killian for a few days.
He actually probably would be pretty good.
He got ill, so they brought in Wink Martindale of Tic-Tac-Doe.
Man, your game show host knowledge is quite impressive.
How much game shows did you
watch? Peter Scalori of, was the Whammies? Pressure Luck.
Pressure Luck.
He came in. God. I watched a lot of game shows growing up. I'm not going to
obviously.
Lie. I just watched, dropped a Peter Scalori.
You watched an inhuman amount.
I will say this, though.
Don't tell me next time we're going to have a giant gong back here.
I didn't have cable. Game shows were on network TV.
No whammies.
Wink Martindale was the father I never had.
Why do I believe you?
To this day, I call my penis Wink Martindale.
Once again, I believe you. That's just wrong.
Doesn't wink as much as he used to. How's the cigar treating you, boys?
I don't know. It's beginning to taste a lot like tears.
No whammies, no whammies. Stop. That's going to be on my tombstone.
I'm getting nice leather. I got some cedar there.
Leather and tears.
Leather and tears.
Leather and tears.
Sad.
I actually am getting leather. Leather, the cedar note is really picked up for me. I'm still getting some of that really nice sweetness you guys talked about in the beginning, though.
Yeah.
Sweetness, leather.
That's the ometepe.
And I
think it is the ometepe?
I'm hoping so, as opposed to the beer. I really am.
No. I gave it some space from the beer. The sweetness is coming from the cigar.
I'm surprised that when you said that it was the Esteli Ligero, then that would...
I just said Esteli. I don't know what's the Ligero. Okay. What's I don't know the components.
I was expecting a little bit more of a mineral push. Yeah. A little bit more of that earthy deal.
Like we got in the blending seminar.
Right. But it's not there. I think the ometepe is bumped up a little bit. It's not overpowering because that sweetness is not foreign center. I mean, you get a nice leather. You got some cedar kicking in there.
Dude, look at us. A year and a half into this, the guy's talking about like about 30% ometepe. Sensing a little bit of mineral off the, I'm guessing about a 47.9%.
I don't even know who you are anymore.
I like it.
Meanwhile, 502 guy's ass laughing his ass off. It's 10% ometepe.
Enrique Sanchez like, I didn't put any ometepe in there. It's really good.
It is.
It's more complex than the Namakubi last week.
Very much so. Is.
The cedars flowing around, right. The leather, the sweetness, yeah. Which I believe the Emerald, too, had just a nice transitions throughout.
Right.
It's a beautiful-looking cigar. It's burning beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had before it dropped, I had a beautiful ash that just stuck together. It was gorgeous. And normally, I'm not a big ash guy. I'll dump those all day long. But this one, I kind of let go.
Well, the ash is pretty. The draw is perfect. Yeah, I'm digging it. I'm digging a lot. You ready to guess the price point?
Man.
I'll give you a hint. Or no, I'm not going to give you a hint. I want to see what you think. This guy makes good cigars, man. We had the Emerald in this. And what was that?
I'd go $10.2.
$10?
$10, 20 cents.
I'm probably going to go around.
It's a Robusto.
I'm going to go around 7.
Oh, for a Robusto?
Yeah, it's a Robusto.
I'm going to roll around 7.
Roll around 7? I think that's a pretty good price. I'd actually go about $7.50.
Online, you can find these bad boys for about $6.50.
Okay.
And I would
for
buy
a Robusto? Yeah.
For the Robusto. And I would buy one in a heartbeat from what I'm getting now. It's smoking slow. It's not a fast-burning Robusto. Lots of flavors. Gorgeous. Just oily, silky wrapper.
I was about to say, with us, it's lasted about, what, an hour and 20?
Yeah. Yes.
Which is fantastic.
Robusto. Yeah. Usually you smoke those in, what, 20 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I hear Jose Blanco, slow down, young man.
I'm enjoying it. And it's going really well with the beer. The beer is, you know what, the more I have, I'm getting more hoppiness as we go on.
And I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be kind of the opposite. It's not,
maybe
it's just because I've gotten used to it.
Maybe,
I'm
I don't know, I'm tasting more of the bitterness as I.
I'm not getting any bitter. I've got a nice little honey taste kicking into it. I'm loving it. You got a little citrus honey. With the honey, yeah.
I'm still getting the orange.
That might be the cigar that kind of flavors into it.
It's a good pairing.
Yes.
It's a really good pairing. Well done as far as
anything that makes me taste honey, I'm for. Especially if it's local honey.
I don't like honey.
Oh, God, he brought up the local
definitely
honey.
Definitely don't like local honey.
Oh, come on.
But it's good. It's a good pairing. And it's a widely available beer. And you can get these cigars, at least online, I'll give a free plug here. The Cigar Federation, the guys that interviewed Glenn Loop before us, they do have these on their website.
Okay.
Famous, our site sponsor, has some other 1502 offerings, but they don't have the Nicaragua.
Okay.
$6.50 for, this is going to go on for at least another 30, 45 minutes. Good stuff. And where'd you get the hop butter?
I got it at Total Wine.
Which is a big chain here in Texas. So Sierra Nevada, you can look hard
enough
to find it.
They are pretty much distributed all across the United States. So
my guess is that they're big enough now that the hipsters are kind of probably jumping ship.
But they've always been big. They're one of the older ones. They've been around since 1980. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but that's how the hipsters would be like. Eh.
Yeah, but I completely disagree with that.
As soon as they got mainstream, everybody's
if you
like,
want to find a great beer, like I said, go out and find their pale ale.
There was a time when Hootie was a hip college band before they got All I Want to Be With You.
Can we edit that out of the show?
No, we probably
can. Can I edit that out of my brain?
No, because Simon Cowell just said that man is a genius.
Drink more.
Well, it's funny. We're talking a lot about Richard Dawson as Killian. He is, to me, half part Simon Cowell. Because Simon Cowell kind of became that host of, he's kind of part Simon Cowell, part... I don't know who the other part is. We don't really have a modern game show equivalent of...
Closest we got is The Advocate. Paul Heyman.
He is. He's got a lot of WWE Paul Heyman wrestler in him, sure. All these mid-80s Arnold flicks have such a wrestling kind of... it's there.
Yeah.
And, Killian, like I said, he's not discouraged about getting Richards. He asked to call the president's entertainment agent, which that's just crazy that the president has an entertainment agent. We go back to the apartment, Amber's apartment, where Richard has tied up Amber
He's a good guy, but he puts her in a little negligee and he ties her up like with stockings to her exercise equipment. And he's enjoying a cup of coffee as he rummages through her things. It turns out that not only is she a musician, but she's the composer of the network theme song. I love
this.
Rosa
Jingo.
We bring you joy, we bring you strife.
What a great name.
That should be our logo.
Tuesday Night Cigar Club. We bring you joy, we bring you strife.
T-shirt?
Totally. Totally.
By the way, you can buy Tuesday Night Cigar Club t-shirts on the website now.
That is right.
Is there a shop link on there?
There is a shop link.
Buy them.
Go to our menu and it says shop.
Richard.
Even get a coffee cup.
Did you get one yet?
I have not gotten one yet.
Need to. Richards finds a box in her closet of censored cassette tapes.
Contraband.
They dropped the ball on that, too. Like, 2017, we're still listening to cassette tapes. They could just have, like, little discs or something. Like,
yeah.
Oh, black market music discs. No, it's still old cassette tapes. And black market clothing. He pulls out a blouse, and somehow he knows that that's a black market blouse. She has a blouse.
You've been
on
in prison for how many months?
About a year and a half. Wow. And he has a keen eye for what blouses are on the censored list. What makes a censored blouse?
I don't...
Cody?
I have no idea.
You're in the hot seat.
I would like to know.
Well, that confused me, the black market blouse. But anyway, more importantly, he finds her travel pass, which is a little microchip. And with that, you can scan it with a barcode reader on your TV, which is kind of progressive as far as technology, and book your vacations and whatnot right there in your own home. And that's going to allow him to leave the quad, which he's trapped in here, and he books them a Hawaiian vacation together. Next thing you know, they're at the airport. Richards get past the first checkpoint, but as they walk through the terminal, Amber sees an opening there, and she stomps on his foot and just blasts him with her fist right in his balls. She yells out for help. It's Ben Richards.
It's the butcher of Bakersfield.
The butcher of Bakersfield. He's kidnapped me. And Richards runs for it. He runs out onto the runway, only, we've mentioned this on the show a million times.
Here comes the ultimate.
Finally, we're watching a movie that actually has it. Our favorite movie prop, seemingly, of all time.
Giant net gun.
They capture him with the fucking net gun. Again, if any of you listeners have access to a net gun,
please give it to us.
We will do a podcast where all we do is talk about you and how awesome you are as we shoot each other with the net gun. Get us a net gun.
We would just run around for hours shooting each other with a net gun. It would be awesome. Plugging you and your awesomeness.
I'm asked often, like, what is the end game of this podcast? Like, why do you do this? Like, what will you get out of this ultimately? I'm like, well, you know, we've only been doing it for so long. We've gotten to speak to so many influential people, have some great experiences, and but ultimately, I just want it to lead to me having a net gun. God damn it! Give me a net gun.
Took down Kurt Russell, and now it took down Arnold.
It did take down Kurt Russell, but this is the best net gun. This thing shoots wide.
This was a running net gun. Standing net gun.
Well, next thing you know, Richards is meeting with Killian. He's in a detention cell. Or as Richards calls Killian, the asshole on TV.
He's very blunt. On TV.
Oh, you're the asshole on TV. I could say the same about you, Ben. Killian gets... as Killian's talking to him in this little safe room, he gets Sven, his bodyguard, to light his cigarette with him with his little gold lighter. And... I'm going to get back to that because, God, they dropped the ball on the smoking thing. These guys smoke in every workplace, every... If only they knew. 2000...
Not today, my friends.
15 years, like, early 2000s, you couldn't pull that shit off. And that, actually, I understand that.
Yeah.
We're for a lot of things. I understand no cigarette smoking in the workplace.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, he gives him an offer he can't refuse, Killian does. Either Richards appears on tomorrow night's edition of The Running Man, or else the newly captured Weiss and Laughlin will. Now, this always kind of confused me. He shows up on his monitors, the captured Weiss and Laughlin, and Richards, Arnold, gets this sigh like, oh, no, Weiss, Laughlin.
dude, these guys were debating killing you like two nights ago.
Yes, but it goes to this. He's just a man with a giant heart and huge biceps. His biceps are only equaled by his giant heart. He cares about everybody.
He sounds so concerned, but they were ready to fry his ass at Nick's place like two nights ago. They don't give a shit about him.
We don't know who he is.
Oh, why is Laughlin? I don't know. It always struck me as odd. I'd be like, all right, damn. Go with them, man. But you know what? That's why he's a hero, well, you know, and I'm a schmuck.
It would have made more sense if they had actually, like, you know, dug up, like, hey, in the next room is your brother that went off to re-education.
Yeah, remember your brother? That would have been good.
Yeah.
But no, Weiss and Lava, I just always wondered, like, he seems so connected to those guys, and they were pretty much dicks.
Well, they served time.
They're pretty much dicks to him.
No, they served time. There's a bond.
I'm wrong. That's just me. I would have fed those fuckers to the wolves.
That would have been climbing for dollars.
But of course, Richards is an admirable hero, unlike your trusty host here. So he doesn't, and the next thing you know, he's getting a physical. He's pumped full of drugs. Did you guys catch the Franco Colombo cameo there?
Yes.
Arnold's old bodybuilding best friend, the Sardinian nightmare, Franco Colombo. He's working one of the computers when they're logging his...
Tapping away at those keys.
Jabbing him with syringes and just pumping him full of stuff.
Oh, the needle through the, like, the hand thing.
Arnold has all... Oh, they do put a needle through the skin between his fingers.
It's just painful.
Yeah, that was a good visual. But, you know, it's a good point to make with Franco. Arnold has notoriously, up until now, like, he always finds a way to get his friends in his movies.
Yeah.
He's a loyal dude, and that's one of the things I love about him. But anyway, then he's shoved in a cell, and they spew this gas in there.
I love that line where dude's lighting a cigarette. All right, knock him out till showtime.
But then the technician in the medical laboratory kicks up his feet in 2017, lights up a cigarette. All right, lock and load. Where he's like,
this is a knock him out till showtime.
Wow, like it never even crossed these people's minds that in 2017 you wouldn't be able to smoke a cigarette anywhere.
You can't wear all white to work.
Well, that's a whole nother issue. But no, I mean, you guys want to hear something crazy? It sounds crazy, but it's not. I worked at the movie theater all through high school and high school and college. You used to be able to step out of the movie theater into the lobby, inside the lobby area, and light a cigarette.
Yeah.
You could, I mean, we'd have dudes lean on, like, by the popcorn machine and smoke puffing cigarettes away, yeah. And nobody thought anything of it.
Sir, you cannot ash into the popcorn.
Oh, sorry, I didn't see that. If you did that now? I mean, it's just crazy how far we've come in such a short amount of time. You could smoke on airplanes. Remember the little ashtray and the arm thing? I remember sitting on flights. I used to fly every summer to go home when I was a kid. Dudes just...
I just remember I was on a flight from Macedonia back to the States.
This tour of war-torn countries.
Anyway, this was after like...
Was that the Travis Tritt tour?
yes, it was. It was after the American Airlines had stopped cigarette smoking on the airlines. And it was funny because as soon as they got to cruising altitude, the cockpit at the time, this was even more weird, is that especially, you know, given after 9/11, the cockpit on this plane was actually open. You could see into the cockpit the entire flight. The moment they hit 30,000, cigarettes lit up all throughout
drinking,
that thing.
It was crazy.
It was crazy. Within like 10 minutes, that thing was just a smoke-filled cabin.
It's just insane what was not even a blip on the social conscious radar 20 years ago is now, like, you would be an insane person for walking into a movie theater lobby and lighting up a cigarette.
Now, if you lit up a cigarette, you would be in that prison camp at the beginning of the movie.
Going for re-education.
You would be sent off for re-education.
It would be James Carville right there, 24/7. Damn, Republicans want to feed your kids cigarettes. They want your kids cigarette smoke all the time.
And you know what? It's weird. We had a long talk with Glenn about smoker rights and was not. It's like, you know, no one's saying we should smoke cigars in movie theaters and in airplanes.
Yeah. Well, I like.
But like when you went to Seattle, you literally couldn't smoke on the street.
Anywhere. Yeah, I liked Fred during his interview, which we'll be getting here, you know, shortly. Fred made it real sensible.
This is Fred Rui of,
Fred Rui
Nomad.
Of Nomad. He made a very sensible comment. He was like, look, you know, you should have the right to smoke in a park, but at the same time, don't be the asshole who smokes in the center of the park right next to all the kids. He's like, you got to have some common sense to it. There's people that don't like cigarette smoke. There's people that don't like cigar smoke. Find you an out-of-the-way corner over
there. If you're at your kid's ball game, walk down the fence line and smoke away from everybody.
Right, right. Smoke downwind.
Don't be the dickhead.
Right.
You know, there is a responsibility from us as cigar smokers to... And I say that, but then I remember when you got married at your wedding, I remember one of the first things... The wedding planners told us, like, they don't allow smoking anything under in a closed, like the dance floor, no smoking. This area, there's no smoking. And then within like 10 seconds of getting there and getting a drink,
we're all smoking everywhere.
Dude, just puffing away. Like, there's shots of me, like, at the under this inside at the rehearsal, they're like giving a speech with my stogie. I'm on the dance floor with my wife with the stogie. Like,
I forgot about that. That was actually that inside the pavilion.
That guy was so adamant, like, whatever you do, there cannot be. I know you guys like your cigars. I think it's awesome. But just do not. I'm like, okay, that sounds great. Literally, dude.
You were that guy.
Two double makers into the afternoon, and dude, we were just smoking everywhere. It was crazy. I'm going to the bathroom with the smoke.
Oh, it was a good night.
This house has been here for 200 years. The you know.
Oh, that's nice. Just let me put my cigar out on the side of it.
It was a hey. You guys like the 3,000-year-old relic of a mansion? Let me give you a tour. I got this. But you know that's booze involved. That changes everything. Yaks changes everything. I don't know. I got tickled watching this movie where they could smoke because they nailed so many things that would change in the future. But they didn't even think that they'll be able to smoke. No. They missed that one big time. Well, the next morning, Amber's watching TV, and she sees a news report that claims Richard shot a couple of guards at the airport when he was trying to escape.
Right.
And also has bloody video footage showing the aftermath. There's blood everywhere.
Blood bodies everywhere. Yeah.
And she knows that's not how it happened. Yeah. There was no bloodshed. The government is lying. Imagine that. That's her first little inclination. Oh, boy. Uh-oh. As she sits there stunned at her piano, the regular scheduled program kicks back on, Climbing for Dollars.
Climbing for Dollars, one of my favorite game shows.
Where a poor son of a bitch in a unitard climbs up a thick rope, collecting money in his mouth and on these Velcro straps on his body.
Why, the quintessential attack dog of the 80s.
While Doberman pinchers chew at his feet, he gets to the top finally when a nozzle shoots out of nowhere and sprays him in the face with gas. And he falls, and as he's falling, they freeze frame. Climbing for Dollars, we'll be right back. Hilarious. It's much like RoboCop. They did a bunch of really funny network TV promos and stuff, but oh my god. We're not that far from... What is Climbing for Dollars? It's America's Ninja or whatever that stupid... You know.
Well, I mean, it harkens back to the gladiators. Gladiators?
Gladiators?
The gladiators at the Colosseum.
Yes, the Colosseum.
I had a Colosseum with some pepperoni earlier. It was really
it was delicious.
Good.
Delicious.
Tell us more about the gladiators.
It's just a way to appease the masses and, you know, keep them.
Killian touches on that later. We'll bring up the gladiators and what it does for the
code of the podcasters.
The collective
code podcast. Of the podcasters.
Code of the podcasters. Well, that night, we see everything starting to get ramped up for the big show.
What I love about this is like the perfect 80s montage with a reason. It's not just the standard 80s montage.
No. It actually has a reason. It's building a vibe. It's building the vibe of the event. Richard's newly appointed entertainment attorney comes and gets him out of his cell. It's really well edited, the whole flow of the thing.
It actually is.
You just got that beat in the background.
Richard's is given an entertainment attorney. He comes and grabs him out of his cell. The Running Man dancers are warming up the crowd in their little dance skins. Should be noted, all the dance moves were choreographed by Paula Abdul.
Paula Abdul? She did everything in the 80s.
Yeah, but they were good. It was good. The dancers were really, really good.
She was good back then.
All the
before
poor,
the prescription drugs.
Right? All the poor folks in the city are gathered around their giant TVs, placing bets on which stalkers are going to get the best kills. As Richards is marched down the ICS hallways, he passes Amber and a female coworker friend as they're feeding their $6 and quarters to get
$6 to get a Cadre Cola.
And you know they thought Cadre that was crazy. Cola. You know they thought that was crazy. Like in 2017, it'll be $6 for a Coke. But dude, I've been at the hospital a lot lately, and dude, it's like $4 for a Coke. So they were close. They weren't.
Well, the next time you're over there, if they see you see a giant dude being hauled down the thing in like a yellow jumpsuit, like I knew this was gonna happen.
I was about to say they might not have hit the mark on the vending machine prices, but they've hit the mark on stadium prices.
Yeah, what's a beer cost you?
Oh, good God! We went to a concert.
Mincy went to a baseball game the other day, and he said he couldn't even drink beer. It was like $8 for a 12-ounce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We went to a Cure concert at the Frank Irwin Center a couple of weeks ago.
That'll make you want to drink.
Exactly. But it was $9 for a Bud Light. I am not paying $9
for a bottle?
For a Bud Light.
Like
it was,
16
it was
ounce,
like a tall
like
boy.
A 16 ounce.
Yeah, but it's still Bud Light. $9. No.
How is that?
We refer to that as festival prices.
Yeah.
And that's how they get you. Rule number one, they make their money off the ticket. If you want to drink, because they're not there to get you drunk. They don't want a drunk crowd, and it sucks. They don't even want people to have a buzz.
At a Cure concert?
Well, if you want, hey, at that point, they pretty much figure you came loaded.
I was going to say, if you didn't bring something yourself, Tut, that's on you. Go to the Gladiators.
Next up, Smith's reunion.
The Smith's reunion, you better damn well bring a flask.
I know. I will be bringing my 8-ball smack.
I'd like to bring a cheeseburger to a Morrissey concert.
Oh, I don't.
This is wrong.
Right when he shows like the 15-minute montage of like animal slaughterhouses, just pull out a cheeseburger.
Oh,
just that crunch of the lettuce.
Oh, it's so good.
I think I'm the one. I'm the one in the video off to the left. That's me killing the cow. I'm so sorry.
Dead animal.
Cody's
flesh.
Got the nail gun in the cow's head. That's me. I'm up there.
Go to the Gladiators.
We totally said that at the same time. I love eating meat. Do you think it's just a matter of time until they take that away from us?
They can try.
They can try. Over my dead beefy hand. they're really setting the pace for this. But anyway, as Richards gets kind of shuffled down the hallway by Sven, the bodyguard and his entertainment lawyer, he passes Amber and a female coworker. They're getting the $6 Coke. Okay. And a weird bit of... You guys had to pick up on this weird bit of dialogue with the female coworker. She stares at Richards as she's talking to Amber. And she tells her how lucky Amber was to be alive. I mean, a man that size could have easily done whatever he wanted to you. He could have raped you, killed you, or killed you and raped you. And then she licks her lips.
Like, what are you thinking about?
And she just drinks in Arnold with her eyes like, oh.
It's like, wait, do you...
That's called charisma, boys.
Is that what we're calling it? Because I'm sitting here thinking wackadoo.
When you walk down an aisle and a chick is saying shit like that, fucking charisma.
Did you want him to rape you then kill or kill
no,
you?
No, she sounded more excited about the killing than raping scenario. Just, oh my!
Can I watch?
Oh my! Necrophilia.
I've been in the podcast business quite a while, boys. That guy has it.
Not sure what it is.
I teach it to you, but I can't. But that it's a good point.
You can't teach what he has. He has.
It's a good point. This movie scored higher with women than it did men.
Really?
They loved Arnold. A lot of it is the humor. But Arnold brought something. It started with Predator. it really skyrocketed. It peaked with Running Man. Charisma.
Yeah.
That is something that Stallone never had back in these days. It's something that none of the other action guys had, was a charisma, a likability. Stallone always came across as
I kind of disagree with this. I mean, they had charisma, just not, you know, Arnold charisma. Arnold took it to the next level.
No,
but you can't
near.
Get blockbuster like Stallone did without having some sort of
charisma.
No, no,
no. I think
you can't get blockbuster of Bruce Willis without having
you're
some
getting,
sort of
no, no,
charisma.
No, you're getting... This is pre-Die Hard.
Okay.
You're getting charisma confused with machismo.
I consider
Stallone,
that kind of the same
Stallone
thing.
Had machismo at the ass in First Blood and Rambo Part 2. But Arnold exuded a charisma, a likability,
yeah.
a sense of humor that chicks just loved. They wanted him to kill them and then rape them. Maybe not.
Obviously not in that order because she reversed it.
No, she thought about it. He could rape you and then kill you. Or kill you and then rape you.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Oh my.
Anyway, it was just her little delivery of that was crazy. But I just, there was nobody like that not only in the action movie scene, but on the big screen that was just exuding that kind of masculinity, but with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
But it was like, he wasn't just a body.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of, as action movie fans, big dudes. Dolph Lundgren had a big fucking body. He didn't have charisma.
Yeah.
No.
Dolph Lundgren has never had an ounce of charisma in his body. Doesn't exist. You can't have all the
go see Kindergarten Cop 2.
Please tell me you haven't watched that yet.
I have, and I made it about a quarter of the way through it.
Did you rent it?
No, it's on Netflix.
I wanted to do a show on that.
I would suggest not.
Okay. They just are in September releasing Hard Target 2 with Scott Adkins. We'll do that one. but I mean, you can have the biggest. There's a lot of guys with muscles. It takes a certain charisma, and I see that now. We've mentioned on the show before. I see it with Cena.
Yeah,
he was in. We were talking before the show about that Wahlberg Will Ferrell movie.
Yeah,
that just came out. Daddy's Home. Daddy's Home. I think is the name.
Okay.
Of it. He's in that. He's in Sisters.
He's in Sisters.
He's in Trainwreck with Amy Schumer. These little small humor thing. The guy just he plays off his muscles.
Yeah.
That is what got Arnold over into the female demographic. When we're watching a movie and Jenny's like, John Cena shows up.
Hey, oh my.
She's not like, oh, you know.
It's John Cena.
When Batista shows up in a James Bond movie or Guardians of the Galaxy, he's a big muscle guy. She's not like, oh. No, when Cena shows up, she's like,
hey,
when Arnold showed up in these days, it was something different. It was a big guy with a sense of humor, and that charisma, dude, is what. And he took it all the way to True Lies, which really played on it.
Oh yeah,
that was his peak of mixture of bravado and that sense of humor. That was kind of the perfect blend of both those things. But I don't think he gets enough credit for it, and it really Running Man is where that all came together for him.
Yeah.
Up on stage, Killian is now driving the audience into a frenzy with his million-dollar catchphrases. Who loves you and who do you love? Damon! Yes!
I love that scene.
It's like
that's actually great cinematic framing.
Yeah.
It's got that big ICS logo behind it.
His hands up
it's
in the air.
Hands up, the little circle that's kind of encapsulating
it. He's part Simon Cowell, part Donald
love
Trump.
It, man.
He's got a lot of Trump in him.
Yeah. Trump's got a lot of Killian in him.
Either way you look at it, it's scary. It's terrifying.
It's spot on.
It's spot on. But it's part Simon Cowell, it's part Donald Trump, it's all awesome.
Yeah.
In a movie setting, not in real life. That's what we're experiencing now, and it sucks. It's like, holy shit, people are really doing this. Like,
haven't you seen Running Man, damn it?
Oh my god. He even has a cute little old lady in the front row, Mrs. McCardle.
Love her.
Whom he charms each episode. She's like his go-to little thing, and the guy's just oozing game show hostness. to like astronomical levels.
Well, he's a game show host.
And dude, even like Family Feud style, he gets kisses from the ladies, no tongues. Oh my god. Once the crowd is properly hyped up, Killian cues the video introducing the Butcher of Bakersfield.
Watch!
Ben Richards.
That's great.
The video of the food riot has been recut to show Richards disregarding orders to not fire.
To hell with you.
To hell with you, I'll kill everybody. And all of a sudden it just shows buildings exploding. He's just killing everything in sight.
It's just one Gatling gun on the side. It's just blowing everything up.
It portrays him as this loose cannon, and he just massacres thousands of people.
And everybody's just...
And the audience is like, oh,
no.
But the irony there is like, oh, no, let's massacre. Let's see some massacring on this stage.
That's right.
Real quick, you and I are almost done with the cigar. You finished. Final thoughts on the 1502 Nicaragua.
Such a really, really smooth smoke all the way through.
It was smooth.
Nice transitions that played through it. I love the way that the leather and the cedar really kind of amped up. The leather was kind of brought in around the halfway mark and kind of amped up towards the end of it. It was just a real... It never really strengthened up, in my opinion, that much, but it had flavor changes in it.
I couldn't believe how lacking strength it had for a Nicaraguan Puro.
Yeah, it was...
When I think Nicaragua Puro, I think I'm going to get a little bit
more of a heft to it. Yeah.
A full experience.
Yeah.
Well, for mine, it was good. It was smooth, but I never got any other transition off of mine other than just kind of the leather and that sweetness.
Yeah.
So I didn't... If there was a cedar, if there was any other thing, I wasn't getting it off of mine. So, I mean, it wasn't quite there.
It kind of reminded me of last week's cigar, honestly, a little bit, where it had some little things going on.
Yeah.
Much more pronounced. The cedar and the leather were much more pronounced.
Yeah.
The sweetness was much more pronounced.
Right. The Ometepe.
But 2 hours, $6. Perfect construction, perfect draw.
And for a Robusto, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. Thumbs up. Okay. And it went really well with the beer.
Yeah, that was actually a really, really good pairing. Like I said, any combination that brings honey to my taste, I'm loving it.
I never got the honey. Did you get any honey?
I got nothing of that. Like I said, I got a little bit of sweetness. I got very strong earthy flavors, but I picked up nothing else. So that's either that's myself right now.
That's or, where I'm at in my life right now. I'm incapable of experiencing honey. I love the beer. The beer is phenomenal.
The beer is fantastic.
Beer is definitely a
winner. And I think it has kind of pushed the cigar up a little bit. The cigar is just balanced really well with the beer. So great pairing. And two things you can find if you seek them out. So,
yeah.
Do it. Back to the movie. The crowd boos and hisses as Richard is led out before them. And he's in his blue jumpsuit and they strip him down to this bright yellow banana unitard. I don't think that would ever happen nowadays.
What?
That's a bold choice, the bright yellow. Like, nowadays they put him in, like, a tactical vest.
Yeah.
And, like, some, like, Gerard Butler gamer gear. Like,
yeah.
It's just a yellow jumpsuit, basically. Which I appreciate.
In reality, they're here. It's like, we're about to send you out into this thing. We don't want to camouflage you. Here's the giant neon yellow suit.
I kind of thought it was a nod to Bruce Lee's banana suit.
Oh, kind of a Kill Bill.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, I can see that.
I don't think it was a nod. I can see it, but I don't think it was a nod. I think it was you just stick out like a sore thumb in the quad. But anyway, I just thought nowadays the aesthetic in movies is just so clunky,
black.
And they give them like a bulletproof vest. And
it's like Stone Cold actually talks about that with wrestlers get up. It was like, you know, back in the day you would have all these colorful, flamboyant gear. Now everybody's in black.
Ravishing Rick Rude.
Yeah.
His cape and his tights.
Where's the fringe?
Where's the fringe? Where's
the Macho boas. Man? Come
the
on.
Boas.
Where's the boas?
I mean, there was so much just neon color. How did they see through those sunglasses?
Jesse the Body. mean, that guy was the most flamboyant. He was like Liberace out there. But I liked
Ric Flair, giant boas.
But hey, that yellow costume is solidified in our memories as a great, choice. Well, Killian explains that if Richards can defeat the game, he'll join three of last season's winners, basking under the Maui sun.
Whitman,
Sadat, and
Whitman, Price, and
Price
Haddad.
And Haddad. Where all his criminal charges will be erased, his debt to society paid in full. But there's a catch. Killian reveals that Ben's buddies, Weiss and Laughlin, are also going to be joining him in the game
zone. It takes a big man to say you can't do it alone.
Yeah, the runners have 3 hours to make it through all four quads as the Stalkers are hot on their heels. Now, they didn't have a Hop Stalker beer for tonight, but as I said, in the book, they are hunters, so the Hop Hunter makes perfect sense.
All right.
We continue. We've been really good on our pairings lately. This works. It's a damn good beer. Well, Arnold gives Killian his trademark line of, I'll be back. This is before it got cheesy.
Yeah.
He only said it a few times at this point. Before he and Weiss and Laughlin are shot down this crazy series
but
of tunnels.
I love this. Killian's actual response, only in a rerun.
It's a great line. Nobody's ever come back to him with it.
Yeah, I know.
And that was what was great.
I'll be back.
But he had that little nod in his head, like, yeah.
Yeah, he's seen it all. He knows how this is going to play out. Or does he?
He does not.
Code of the Gladiators. they put him in these little pods on a track.
I'm often wondering how these things actually made it down.
Very rarely, when I'm making my notes on the film, do I have trouble descriptively describing something. I don't know how to describe these things.
It's a steel cage with a rocket on it.
But it's like they get shot down a tube.
It's like a little egg that they get in, and it's got a jet on the back, and it shoots them down the series of tubes.
But it seems like it's taking them through this wild course. Which I'm like, I really don't understand. It could have just been like an elevator down. Now you're in the quad. Why don't I understand why it had to like fire them down a tube?
Because it's more exciting to
be going
jet sledding with a bunch of sparks and stuff.
But this thing shoots them down the series. It's like a bank tube. When you send the canister in a bank, it just shoots around all these like real sharp turns. It looks really, really cool.
Yeah.
I wonder how they did that. This is pre-CGI. I wonder how they did those tubes.
I'm assuming it looked like they kind of shot them down like sewer tunnels.
I think that's what it was supposed to be.
Oh, okay. It was
I've never seen a sewer tunnel like that.
I've seen it, and it's always occurred to me on many occasions.
The only sewer tunnels I've ever seen are Jason Takes Manhattan. They're just filled with toxic waste.
They could literally have just stuck him on like an elevator or have walked him down. Here you go. Start running. Have fun.
But they shoot him down, and it's really cool. The high speed, they shoot these guys. Their faces are gyrating, their cheeks are trembling, and they shoot him down the game zone. Back up in the studio, Killian selects this old broad named Edith to select the night's first stalker. It's very audience participation heavy. Now. And she likes her men. Her husband and her sons have their favorites,
but
she likes her men big and cuddly. She'd like the Tuesday Night Cigar Club.
Yeah.
So she goes with Sub-Zero.
Sub-Zero.
And this is where the movie just kind of takes off, and it's very quick from this point on. It's like, boom, boom, boom. He's a big bastard with a Japanese guy with a Razor Shark hockey stick. Who, according to the announcer, I'll get to that announcer later, cuts his victims up into little pieces of sushi.
Quivering bloody sushi.
That sounds like some questionable racist shit we would have said last episode. It's on YouTube,
but it also makes me question. Like,
please,
so
everybody, watch it except for the Yakuza.
I mean, obviously, we're seeing the hunter, the stalkers here for the first time for this show. But I also ask a question: how many gongs did they go through, like, in a season? Like, get more gongs. He chopped through these five.
They're prop gongs. He had them made. But yeah, he takes his hockey stick and he slices. He slices through this gong. That's racist.
Is it? He did it.
Wait, it's racist because he sliced through a gong?
The Japanese guy has a gong.
Oh, well, okay. All right. I see you're going with that.
I'm offended.
I'm just wondering because he's like he just slices. If it's a prop gong, hipster's and wearing always plaid. Splits apart. Does he do this every time? Like same.
I think he does. That's his intro.
And well, I love the smile he gives.
He gives a little smile. He has played. I'm not sure the actor's name. He was in quite a few things. He was the bad guy henchman in Last Action Hero. Years later, for Arnold,
but he was also.
Yes, you looked like you were going somewhere.
He was an odd job, if that's where you're going.
No,
he was not.
He
odd
was
job.
Not odd job. It'll come to me.
Okay. Well, the motor as they shoot out these tunnels, these nets catch their little pods, and these motorcycle bikers herd the three running men into the first quad, which is an ice rink.
Yeah.
Where they're ambushed quickly by Sub-Zero.
I always thought that there was like this one scene where one of the bikers comes up and he basically rides right up into the camera and then he stops. And he's got like this paintball mask on.
Correct.
And I always thought that was Stephen King.
Was it?
I don't know.
Possibly.
It had his eyes, but I never could tell.
I've never paid attention to Stephen King's eyes.
I say they're bikers, but they're wearing like leather jackets with ICS, the network logo.
Right.
Like this is their little side job.
It's probably one of those guards from earlier on that was talking about it at the prison. Like, hey, did you see the Running Man? I'm going to be on it next week.
Well, Sub-Zero immediately uses wimpy little Weiss, or as Tuttle said, our Tuttle, as a puck as he skates him along and shoots him into a hockey goal, and it closes, and he's done.
He traps him.
Then he takes on Laughlin Richards, but Big Ben Richards finds a way to rip off some barbed wire and strangle Sub-Zero to death. Running Man...
Just,
one, Stalker Zero.
And then
and everybody is just
like,
shocked. It's never happened before.
No, they haven't seen a Stalker die in so long, and it happens really quick. And Richard shouts up to the TV cameras, "Hey, Killian, Sub-Zero, now Plain Zero."
Just classic.
Which I think we've had this talk before. I think a better line would have been, "Sub-Zero, now Absolute Zero." I think that's better.
In the pantheon of Arnold lines, this one's not...
It's not the greatest.
It's not the greatest.
But I think Absolute
Zero...
It's
not bad. It's not great.
Absolute Zero would have made more sense. He's dead. He's Absolute Zero.
Or better just Sub-Zero. Now just Zero. Just...
That would have been good, too. With Plain Zero. It's kind of a weird... As they walk off, he tells Weiss, they free Weiss from the trap, and he's like, "What happened to Sub-Zero?" He goes, "A real pain in the neck." Classic.
Get it? Because he wrapped barbed wire around his neck.
Classic. back up in the dressing room, Killian's on the phone getting shit from the Justice Department.
Now, here's the thing I don't understand. You've got this TV show that deals in death every single night.
I don't
night.
Think they've had a stalker die. It's different when criminals are dying. You haven't had
and he gives them the... It was bound to happen.
It's a contact sport, is what he said.
But I'm surprised that anybody really gives a shit about
this. No, but
this.
It's like concussions in the NFL. These guys are 300 pounds smacking each other around. It's bound to happen. They're going to get brain damage.
And he's sitting here and killing them. I mean, it would be nice if there was just like a little like a screen up in the corner showing the ratings. Like, yeah, look, it's bound to happen. He's giving the fuck yeah. Like, look at that shit.
That's kind of what he's doing. He's like, you knew this was going to happen one day. Like, all right, well, we lost one stalker. No big deal.
We've got tons of these guys.
He tells them he tells them we can't have it both ways. If the government wants Americans glued to their TVs instead of marching in the picket lines, this is important.
Yeah, I mean, this sets up why
this is very important stuff
is going
on. He tells the Justice Department, if you want Americans glued in front of the TV instead of marching the picket lines, there's going to be some blood occasionally.
Yeah.
And they can't do it with Gilligan's Island. People aren't going to gather around their TVs to watch Gilligan's Island.
What? Is that the...
You know, with the skipper.
Is that the one with the boat?
Yes, exactly.
Just that delivery, man. I mean, come on. You got to give this guy props.
That delivery.
That is not
something... The one with the boat.
Yeah, that's not something that he picked up in producer meetings on Family Feud. I mean, this is a dude, a non-actor acting.
But the beautiful thing about the scene that I love is he's sitting there. He's got the little makeup thing still. He's just talking.
Oh, we haven't mentioned his little gay... personal stylist.
Yeah, the stylist.
Every time they cut to commercial, he goes off stage and this little gay guy
looks like
Balky Bartokomous from Perfect Stranger. He like styles and he's always brushing him off. Get off me. He's doing his makeup and all that. There's a real funny moment I'll touch on later with him, with Captain Freedom.
Oh my.
The most important thing here, ratings are up 8 points. Which hasn't happened in a long time.
What's
which
about,
I do
man?
Think would have happened if they gotten that baby on there. Babyface Macho, or whatever the kid's name was.
Motto Babyface
would have gotten them some ratings. But I think Sub-Zero could have taken out.
I think, yeah.
Babyface Macho. Yeah. I don't know. I would have had him as a, you know, do him first, and then Richard's like, all right, you know what, we made a bad choice with the baby. Let's go Richard's. But Killian knows he needs to take things up a notch because a stalker's died. So he sends in 2 stalkers next to take care of business.
Well, he asks, what's his name from the audience who can't decide? Yeah, he's like...
Leroy or some nerd.
I just can't decide. I can't
figure it out. I love Buzzsaw and
Hard decisions.
I love Dynamo. I don't know. And he's like, hard decisions call for hard answers.
And here's 2 hard asses ready to take it on.
So he sends in last year's top stalker, Buzzsaw.
Eddie Kablowski. Is it Kablowski?
The actor?
No, the character name is like Eddie Kablowski or something like that. Which, in my opinion, and this might be so stereotypical, borderline racist, I don't know. But if you would have called him anything other than Kablowski, that was the perfect name for this dude.
And he comes in
Eddie
classic.
Kablowski.
They show these guys like being like chauffeured to the arena or whatever. And they come out.
He's a Polish immigrant. He eats sausage. He makes his opponents into sausage.
But if you look at this dude, he's not like, you know, ripped up.
No, he's a wrestler. He's a big chunky wrestler. But the announcer, which I think his name is Phil, I'm gonna get onto him later too. He has this way of introducing.
Well, I like
his 2-ton chainsaws are made for eating flesh. And
well, I think we missed the first scene of Buzzsaw when he comes to the stadium.
I purposely skipped over that.
I'm bringing it back for Cody.
Cody really wanted a moment here. I'll give it. When Buzzsaw shows up to that night's event, the crowd gathers around his motorcycle outside in the parking lot. And as he's walking inside, this guy comes up to him. Buzzsaw, I love you. I love you so much. And he grabs his face and just shoves him down to the ground. He touched me. Did you guys see that? Buzzsaw touched me.
His face is just bloody. He just broke his nose. Buzzsaw touched me. You see it? Buzzsaw touched me. He's so happy.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you guys noticed this. That actually happened at Cats Fest. The doctor shoved a guy down some stairs. The doctor touched me. Did you guys see that?
I'm suing him for everything he's doing.
Then we had to tell the guy he's not a real doctor. What? No, he didn't really go to Poughkeepsie.
All I'm gonna do is earn $180 out of the suit.
You have so much more money than the doctor. Shout out to the doctor. Code of the Gladiators.
Code of the Gladiators.
Well, Buzzsaw is just a big dude with chainsaws and leather pants.
And a
lot of these guys, he's got the unitard with the little mesh commando Bennett chainmail shirt.
I want that mesh shirt, man.
Well, he's joined by a fat guy covered in Christmas tree lights called Dynamo.
Dynamo.
I would have loved if tonight we could have walked in and there was a neon sign behind me that said, clap if you love Tuttle.
there wouldn't be any clapping.
I would have.
Oh no! I mean, we clap.
I mean,
I would have brought the soundboard in for that one.
Could have used that during the Glenn Loop interview. Dynamo is just a giant fatso covered in Christmas tree lights. And he sings opera, and more importantly, he shoots electricity out of his fingertips.
The most awesome stalker weapon of the entire show.
My favorite stalker by far.
Yes.
Absolutely.
There's no comparison.
No.
I don't give a shit about Sub-Zero. Buzzsaws, meh.
Yeah, Buzzsaw was okay.
Even the guys we're going to see here in a little bit. Dude, for me, Dynamo
rocks.
Is where it's at.
Dynamo fucking rocks.
but wait, there's more. Killian also learns that Amber has been captured in the video records room at ICS, stealing the original footage from the Bakersfield massacre. So he throws a yellow unitard on her and brings her out on stage.
But you know,
and now she's a runner as
but
well.
But here's what I love is that in their headquarters, they've got the little like mini information disc where she had like
cassette tapes. But at least it wasn't cassette tapes.
But so now you've got like this little
disc. I loved how when she was going through the files, it was like Bakersfield Massacre edited footage, Bakersfield footage not edited to where Ben Richards looks innocent. She's all, put that in my bra. Why would they even keep that?
Destroy it. No, we might need this for later.
Well, she tucks that in her bra before she's...
Somewhere.
We're going to talk about that later about where it was put.
I don't think we've touched enough on... now we will, that she's in the banana suit. Man, Maria Conchita Alonso was a...
She was a good-looking woman.
Trying to think of a correct way to show her some respect here on the show. I mean, she was a hot little piece of ass on this thing. Co the Gladiators.
That was your way of showing her respect?
I gave up.
She's a hot piece of ass.
Damn you, hop oil.
But no, she was. She was very good looking. I always appreciate her.
And she's so
her.
Fun on screen.
Yeah.
And she was great in Colors when she was going against a powerhouse like Sean Penn.
Yeah.
She was
yeah.
great in Predator 2.
Yes.
I mean, she was in a lot of these movies, and she's really, really good. Well, she got caught stealing the original footage when she realized that the airport footage was doctored. She's like,
yes.
She got something inside of her, and she had a comfy little living. She was going to look for the truth. I respect that. But Killian throws a yellow unitard on her, and now she's a runner. No judge, no jury. Boom. She didn't have any kind of trial.
No, it's straight into the show.
The Running Man is like the Guantanamo Bay of 2017. You don't need a jury. You don't need anything. Fuck you. Boom. Get in there.
Sure, tell some lies about me.
Sure, tell some lies about me, though. Now we're going to get into the announcer. I love this dude, Phil.
So, her confidant.
Phil, the show's announcer.
Her lover.
He's so absolutely fucking hysterical. He's like every strip club DJ rolled into one. He sits in this little booth, and Killian's like, Phil, tell us all about Amber. He's got this really tiny cigarette. He's burned down to the crisp. He's got his glasses. You know what he looks like? He looks like...
the dude from True Lies?
No, he looks like the dude on ESPN with the old guy with the ponytail, the NFL guy. The little guy. That,
oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. crap.
He looks just like him.
I can't remember that dude's name.
I would know it if I hadn't had this much hop oil in me. That guy.
Yeah,
that guy.
They do the heavy metal commercials where he's in his room. Yeah. He looks just like that dude. And he's leaning into his microphone, and I'm sorry if I'm going to come in heavy on the mic here, but he's smoking his Marlboro Light. And he asked to introduce Amber. And Killian, well, first, Killian starts things off by telling the audience that she's single. She lives on the West Side. And she's disregarded traditional morality her entire life.
In
the crowd, like a Trump rally, he's like, boo, killer. And then Phil comes in. I'll do my best, Phil. She cheated on college exams. She had sexual relationships with two, sometimes three different men in 1 year. And then she met Mad Dog Ben Richards, her confederate, her lover. Now he punctuates everything with the cigarette. Her confederate, her lover.
And you can see Killian, like, Phil's, yeah. Phil's nailing it.
Yeah. And the crowd's eating it up.
Phil's like the Keith Howe of The Running Man.
Hold on, let me read this as Keith Howe. She's cheated on college exams, had sexual relationships with two, sometimes three, different men in 1 year, and then she met Mad Dog Ben Richards. Her confederate, her lover. Her confederate, her confederate, lover.
Her lover. I love Phil. What is that little bastard's name on ESPN?
I do not know. The bad thing about this scene is that as ridiculous as it is about, you know, the only thing that they can trump up.
She's promiscuous, but she's not. They just make that up. But that's enough for the crowd to want blood.
We're getting that way, man.
That filthy whore.
I mean, we're getting that way toward, like, the smallest infractions that you know everybody else does in their fucking private life.
Correct.
And now everybody just turns on that. And
well,
just
it's a groupthink atmosphere. The group says, hang her up. You don't want to be the one guy in the group being, whoa.
That's the mob. But then again, that harkens back to the whole Roman gladiator and the
gladiators.
The gladiators and the colosseum.
Back in the colosseums.
All right, it was the mob rule.
The pepperoni colosseums.
Don't disrespect the colosseums.
I'm not going to.
No, but I mean, it is crazy. Like, you look at these scenes now, at, like, the Trump stuff, and there's this group think, and this group, like, you know, a protester will stand up, and, like, one guy will be like, knock her out. And everybody's like, knock her out. Get her ass out of here. And it's like, that's this Amber scene.
Yeah.
And it all starts with Phil. What's that little bastard's name? Anyway, as Killian sends her flying down the tunnel, he shoves her in a pod and shoots her down into the game zone. And the crowd just cheers and screams for blood. And, dude, I'm seeing a lot of Trump rally in this.
Yeah.
I can't help, man. There's a lot going on in the world today. I'm just equating it. I'm seeing similarities.
Yeah. But see, I would take it even beyond just the Trump rallies. I would think that it's any political rally, even the Bernie rallies. To some degree, Hillary. I mean, it's what the spin doctors called red meat.
John Clayton.
John Clayton, yeah.
John Clayton is the guy's name. Look up John Clayton and look up Phil from Running Man.
But it's political red meat. I mean, you're basically just saying what the crowd wants to hear, and they're feeding off of it.
And
it creates a feeding frenzy atmosphere.
The feeding frenzy is so hyped up, nobody's going to speak out against it. Nobody's like, whoa. You're sending her down to the quad because
she had sex with two guys?
Slept with two guys and she lives on the west side?
She cheated on a high school test?
Wait a second.
I live on the west side.
Her confidant. Her lover. Well,
meanwhile, out in the zone, Richards keeps being led away from where he wants to run by Weiss, who thinks he's discovered the network satellite. And he can get the uplink code and they can finally break into the main grid. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Sure.
Or something to that effect. just as Amber, all of a sudden they're like, somebody's coming. And, Amber joins them. She's got her yellow jumpsuit on.
How did she just run through two quads?
Well, no, the stalkers can't find them, but they just drop Amber off and she stumbles across them. Richards isn't exactly thrilled to see her. She turned him in at the airport. But they don't have time to think about that because Buzzflaw flies over a trash pile on his motorcycle. The group splits up with Richards and Laughlin. They take on Buzzsaw. Weiss and Amber run off with Dynamo in hot pursuit. Buzzsaw lassos Richards' legs, or his torso. And
bolos.
The bolos, the balls on the end of the strings. And drags him behind his motorcycle after slicing up Laughlin. He slices his guts up. As all this action's going on, Killian is having a blast. He's handing out Running Man board games to all the audience members.
You've got the Running Man board game!
It's got the little guy on it. Weiss and Amber find the uplink tower. And he gets right to work on deciphering the secret uplink code, Tut style.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's kind of odd that he like turns to her, remember these numbers.
24-17-64-B-17-17-4.
Whenever...
think you.
I actually just made that up.
No, there was 217.
I know 17-17.
There was 217.
Because every time we get to that scene, I always try to remember.
I always try to, too, and I can't.
I can't either.
Because at the end of the movie, when she remembers, I'm like, she's been through hell. I can't remember that.
I can't even remember. It's only been 20 minutes.
I always remember the 217. Yeah. That's as far as I get.
But anyway, it'd be more like, what's his face? And Nickel?
24.
Mole Man from Simpsons?
No.
Alright, what's the Upland code? Mailbox. Football. Lemonade. We need numbers, Kate. Well, Richards and Buzzsaw get into an epic chainsaw battle with Richards eventually overpowering him. They're going back and forth with chainsaw.
I love this saw.
This saw's a part of me, and I'm going to make it a part of you. Keep it! Richards turns the saw between his legs and just literally saws the dude in half. Right. As he's sawing him in half, this is something I remember. This is something I remember so vividly as a 10-year-old in the theater. His voice, he starts screaming, and his voice goes from as his balls get shredded. I just remember thinking, like, that was awesome. There's so much about this movie. I just remember like, that was so cool. That was so awesome. It was great.
And then the great thing is afterwards, after you know you saw what you just
and
saw,
as
you're
saying
see
that
it.
Though, I'm 10 years old. As his balls are getting chewed up, he's like, ooh, his face is just getting
just drenched in blood.
In chunks, like Evil Dead 2, just in fountains.
But then
of
they,
blood.
They show you that scene, and all it shows you is that weight belt, like chopped in half.
At the end, he had this decorative belt buckle, Cody style, that said Buzzsaw on it, and it's cut in half to where you can see. Just slice the dude in half. You always appreciate a good belt buckle.
I did.
That was another time, Kate. That was another time. I just loved it. I loved that death scene. Dude, there's so much gore and blood in there that as a youngster, man, I was just like, I'm just eating it up. Well, across the quad, Weiss finally cracks the uplink code. He makes Amber recite it just as Dynamo, in the most kind of uneventful death in the thing, shows up.
Is that the one where
come to me, my lovely. Blasts Weiss with his electricity and kills him instantly.
Most awesome.
There's no running. There's no. They just.
Hunter weapon out there.
Just electrocutes him. Amber runs away screaming, which Richards hears now that he's disposed of Buzzsaw. There's a chase, and Richards eventually causes Dynamo's little dune buggies on.
That's when you get that.
He gets in the little dune buggy and has like these little straps that come down. Like,
I'm not
really?
Sure what those little straps do.
He's like, what is that doing? Is that keeping you in the buggy?
Look, the guy's covered in meaningless Christmas tree lights. He's got bigger issues here.
In which Arnold yells at him, "Hey, Christmas tree!"
And I remember as a kid thinking that was pretty funny. Anyway, well, the dune buggy topples over.
The thing that I like, though, is that when Richards is running towards him and Dynamo shoots a couple of lightning bolts at him, and then there's a scene to where they've got lightning arcing up Ben Richards as he's running through there, and I'm like, dude, Weiss just got taken out with one hit, and Richards just ran
Richards
right through it.
Guitar wolf.
It's guitar wolf.
Totally guitar wolf. Biceps wolf. But no, he doesn't face him at all. Well, come on, dude. Weiss was like 140. He's malnutrition. He had those spectacles, so he knew he was a.
They're electric conductors.
Dude, Richards is a true gladiator. Well,
in the Colosseum,
the
Colosseum,
in the Colosseum,
the Colosseum.
The dune buggy topples over some rocks, and Richards comes over to kill him. He's begging Killian to go. Dynamo's begging Killian, go to a commercial! Help me! And then Richards comes out, he pulls this big metal pipe out, and he's about to stick it through Dynamo's head. God damn it! Jesus, help me! And he shoves it down right next to his head. He doesn't kill him. I won't kill anyone, even sadistic scum like you. And the crowd hates it. They wanted Dynamo to die.
I kind of hate it too.
Damn
this
you.
Dude just tried to kill you, man.
Dude, that's what builds Richards up to be a hero,
his
man.
His heart really is as big as his biceps.
Got a restless heart.
All too true. All too true.
They're angry and bloodthirsty. This crowd is getting
They're worked up.
Amped up. And then he says he won't go anyone on this game show, including Dynamo. And that really sets the crowd off. And then Killian does his best to calm him down, like, the best is yet to come. The fat lady hasn't sang. He's throwing out all the little things again. And they're booing his ass. Like, he's never been in...
He's in the hot seat.
And again, he plays it perfectly because the look on his face is like, I don't know what to do here.
I've never been in this hostile environment before.
Yeah.
And he's just saying everything. And none of it's working. So what does he do? He pops up on one of the video monitors out in the zone where Richards is, and he offers him a job as the main stalker, the main man going forward.
I've got an eye for talent.
He's giving him a good deal.
That's just the standard package for a network stalker.
He's going to give him a nice Cadre Cola credit line. He's going to give him an apartment.
A condo on the beach.
On the beach. Typical stalker 5-year deal. He knows a winner when he sees it.
And I love Conchita Lorenz, whatever.
Maria Conchita Alonso.
Marita's face. She actually has a sideways glance to Ben like, are you going?
Like he might take it?
Yeah. Am I in trouble here?
Do I need to get a hold of Mick?
Am I in trouble here? Are you about to take the network deal?
Now that would be a movie that, like Tuesday Night Cigar Club, like we'd take that deal. Beachfront condo, huh? Cadre Cola line?
Cadre Cola?
You mix that with some whiskey. Well, Richards isn't feeling it. Unlike us, he's not feeling it at all. He rips the camera that Killing Something off its perch, gets down into it, tells Damon that he lives to see the day where Damon can eat that stalker contract. Not only should he eat it, but he hopes that Damon leaves enough room for his fist, because he's going to ram it into his stomach, and then he's going to break his goddamn spine. This is where Arnold needs some actor credit, because he's so angry in that scene. I really got that he was pissed off. This guy's been run through the ringer at this point. Like, I got that Arnold was like,
let's break your goddamn spine.
I hate this guy. Arnold.
It really did feel like he grabbed the camera like, oh, shit, he just broke the camera.
I really, dude, I've said it a million times on this show, especially with Maggie. Arnold never gets credit as an actor.
Yeah.
But, dude, I really believed he was so pissed off and tired from this, all these quads. Like, he really wanted to just rip this guy apart like a piece of string cheese.
If nothing else, he just wanted to backhand fist him. Just
I thought it was Arnold's best visceral moment in the film. Well, things are going to get worse for Killian as just then his phone rings and it's the U.S. Attorney General. So the government goes up a notch. They're not liking all these dead bodies and what they're seeing on TV.
Again, you have multiple dead bodies every week. You gotta have at least one or two runners a show.
It's different when the bodies are the hunted and not the hunters.
Lateral damage, man.
A couple black kids die, nobody cares. One cop dies.
What does that have to do with anything?
Same thing. It's exactly what you said.
But look, Price, Whitman, and Haddad made it through.
That's right.
Easy. Take it easy.
Sorry.
Go to the gladiators. You're going to keep bringing up Whitman.
Price and Haddad.
Whitman and Haddad. Why do you not understand who I'm talking about here?
Don't you see that that's the Justice Department calling him is very at... You're like they see death every day. Yes, they do. It's the criminals. They're not calling when the hunted die.
Yeah.
They're calling because the hunters dies. You don't see the analogy there with... A couple black teenagers get killed. Nobody says anything, but one cop gets killed, and the Justice Department is swooping in.
To me, that's a horrible analogy because it's not like the whole premise of the police force is to go out there and kill people.
Well, not where we live,
isn't it?
No. I refuse to believe that.
He needs to go in the hot seat.
But here you have. The cop car says to protect and serve.
No, here you have a.
But it doesn't say who.
here you have a show where the entire premise is to kill people.
Who protects us from you?
Oh, crazy.
Boogie Down Productions, baby. The original Gladiators.
Whoop, whoop. I like what he said.
It's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop.
Can we edit that out?
No, yeah. We can't. Skip's going to love it.
Why do I keep asking you if we can edit things out? You don't edit anything.
I don't touch a thing.
Did you guys see the poster in Killian's office for his other TV show, The Hate Boat?
The Hate Boat. I want to see that show. Oh, God, it's fantastic.
Oh, dude, it's a boat. Just a dark, dank kind of boat in the sea.
The Hate Boat.
It, instead of the Love Boat, it just says The Hate Boat on top of it. We need that for the corner of No Hope. We need a Hate Boat poster. Well, now, fan favorite Fireball, played by Cleveland Browns great and blaxploitation hero
Jim Brown,
is fired up to get into action. See what I did there with the fired up?
Because his weapon is a flamethrower.
A better podcasting crew would acknowledge my brilliance. A crowd follows him out into the parking lot where he fires off a jetpack.
Oh, because he's a fireball.
Huh?
You said he's fired up because he's a fireball.
Yeah, his name's Fireball. He's fired up. It doesn't matter. He goes out in the parking lot and he's got a fucking jetpack. And he hits the damn things and he flies off into the stratosphere. He's going into the quads to take care of business. Cody, do those jetpacks exist?
Yes.
Really?
And no. Not with the giant fucking flames popping out.
I'm confused on where jetpack technology is today. Because there's movies where you see, like, James Bond.
Yeah.
That jetpack exists.
Why in 2016 don't we have jetpacks that you can actually just...
We have actually the... most current equivalent that you can come up with is a guy made a platform that would be more equivalent to the Green Goblin glider. That's about the closest we've come.
Okay.
It's getting there.
I just know that I was looking at James Brown get up. Jim Brown's get up.
James Brown makes cigars.
And, yeah. And he has this strap that's going down between his junk. And I'm like, when that thing lifts off, how is he supported? That would hurt like all get out.
Oh, he's Jim Brown.
That's true.
He's got iron balls.
That is true.
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
He had a lot of straps.
No, I think you're right.
The quote-unquote, the flame shooting out type of jetpack just wouldn't be practical. I mean, obviously he has the fireproof suit, which we'll see later, but that's...
Oh, when he lands in the quad, Amber screams out, "Jesus Christ!" To which Richards retorts back, "Think again."
Think again.
A funny thing has started to happen now. Not only does kindly old Mrs. McCardle, the Killian's little school marm...
The fan favorite.
Fan favorite. She predicting who's going to make the next kill predicts Ben Richards. He tries to talk her out of it, but the common folk betting on the street, they start putting their money on Richards. She says it. He's a mean motherfucker.
Mean motherfucker.
This is unprecedented, boys. Nobody's ever bet on a contestant before.
I can bet on whoever I want to.
Hadid and
Price, Whitman, and Haddad.
There you go. When we get our little folk band together, the three of us, with our acoustic
Price
guitar...
Are we going to call it Price, Whitman, and Haddad?
That's going to be our band name.
Oh, sweet.
It is an awesome band
totally
name.
Totally a band name. And we're going to wear those fucking banana jumpsuits. Oh, God, we don't know any songs. Well, Richard's battles Fireball while Amber runs for cover. Only she soon discovers a creepy old rusty locker room, which is just what my daughter described that bathroom at the pool. Full circle, boys. The beginning of the show. This locker.
I was wondering how you want to tie that story.
This locker room is exactly how my little girl described the public bathroom at the pool. It's just got just fungus and these old rusty lockers and corpses everywhere. It just. It contains the skeletal remains of last season's winner.
Winners.
But then Fireball calmly walks into the room and tells her, no, last season's loser. But just before he can fry her ass with his flamethrowers, Richards drops down from the ceiling. He got up there somehow. And he unhooks Fireball's gas lines to his blowtorch. Fireball starts screaming out, my gas! My gas!
Again, cut to commercial.
Cody on Thanksgiving style. And cut to commercial! They do all say that. Cut to station break! And it's too late. Richards grabs a flare. Tosses it between Fireball's legs and...
Boom.
Explodes in a million pieces, to which Richard says, what a hothead.
What a hothead. Classic.
He's got one for everything. With Fireball dead, Killian goes for the Hail Mary of Running Man things and brings in Captain Freedom.
Captain Freedom.
Phil style?
Captain Freedom, you're wanted in wardrobe. Captain Freedom, you're wanted in wardrobe.
He gets that look in his face like, yeah, it's time. They actually showed him earlier popping some steroids into his mouth when he's hitting the buffet like Chad on Bachelorette. So, Captain Freedom, of course, played by Jesse Ventura, when he shows up in the production booth, which, by the way, I never noticed it before. I've seen this movie 50,000 times. They had a great blinking light wall in that thing.
They had a fantastic...
We've been talking for years about putting in a random blinking light wall that means nothing behind us. That production booth had a great blinking light wall. But Captain Freedom shows up, and he's wearing a giant metal, like, computer box on his chest, like a rope, like C-3PO, and a shiny metal, like, arm sleeve, like a stainless steel. It's very shiny, and it's all super clunky and cheesy looking, and he tells Killian he's not wearing this crap. He's been busting heads and doing this for 30 years. Code of the Gladiators!
I've been killing guys like this with my bare hands.
So Killian, at his wit's end, he yells, Captain Freeman, get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of my sight. And he doesn't move. And then he looks at Sven, his bodyguard. Get him the hell out of here. Doesn't happen.
What? Steroids make you deaf?
So finally, this is my little hairdresser moment. Captain Freedom goes to leave, and he bumps that stupid computer chest right into the gay hairdresser guy. And the gay hairdresser guy gives him a little... And Captain Freedom gives him a... It's like this real subtle little moment. Dude, it had me laughing for like 5 minutes. The little hairdresser's like... And Captain Freedom's like... It was so good. And then Captain Freedom spins out and goes out of the way. Meanwhile, in quad 4, the final quad, they have to get through 4 quads... Richards and Amber have found the Resistance's secret headquarters. Or rather, they're called the People's Network.
Yeah.
They trap them. Mick and Dweezil Zappa actually trap Richards and Amber in their trap. Amber tells Mick that she has the uplink code. She somehow, through all this, remembered the damn uplink code. But they're suddenly distracted by the TV... where Killian's announcing that Captain Freedom has hung up the announcer's mic and come out of retirement to take care of Ben Richards. What Killian's done here is digitally taken Richards' face off some earlier fight footage and dropped it on a stuntman's face and then inserted footage of Captain Freedom fighting them in this kind of spike-walled octagon like an MMA arena. Well, first, this fake Amber comes down where they digitally did her face. Captain Freedom just snaps her neck.
Yeah.
Picks her up, tosses it through the thing. And then he shoves Digital Richard's head. Eventually, they fight a little bit, but then he shoves the Digital Richard's head
into the spike
straight
wall.
Through a spike.
Which is interesting because now this technology is kind of accurate to where we are.
You very well could do it. Well, we cut to the control booth where Brenda, Killian's sidekick, kind of laughingly says,
"Oh,
you didn't have to kill the stuntman, Damon." To which he replies brilliantly, one of my favorite lines in the whole film. "It's all part of life's rich pageant, it's all part of life's rich pattern, Brenda. And you better fucking get used to it." Start using that line with you guys. Hardcore. And to her credit, that chick playing Brenda's like, all right.
Yeah,
you're taking right. notes. I'm learning. Well, the Resistance is now hurriedly loading in their guns and preparing their satellite takeover.
While Richard's doing the celebratory lap around the studio, you're finally getting it.
Yeah, and I didn't make a note of that, but I'm glad you say that. He goes around the production booth. "We're all picked up for the new season." He gives his producer, getting it. They know the whole thing's a sham. They have no confidence in their leader. He's a schmuck. But, you know, he's doing what a good leader does. Fluffing. Stroking him off. Meanwhile, Richards has no faith in Dweezil Zappa and these young pucks getting the job done.
Yeah, they're a bunch of kids.
He tells Mick as much. "Oh, come on, Mick. Bunch of young kids. I thought you were headed for the door." "Well, I told Killian I'd be back. I hate to be a liar. So he puts his fucking Churchill-sized stogie in his mouth. Where'd he get that? I guess in Dweezil's app again. Like, as soon as we complete this mission, my dad gave me this stogie.
Dweezil's putting another one to give me that kid.
My dad gave me this stogie 20 years ago. He said one day I had to accomplish. Arnold puts it in his mouth. It's a big-ass fucking. It's like a Presidente. It's like an 8x54. He starts doing that, and he's going to lead the assault team. As Killian gives call-in viewers are calling in. They want to help the fallen stalkers. Sub-Zero.
Donate to the families.
Killian tells them they can donate to the Patriot Fund via the network, of course. Send us your money. We'll get it to the right channels. Richards and his small army storm the studio. Suddenly, Killian's showboating is interrupted by Mick's video feed. They got the uplink tower. They got the uplink code. They broadcast it across the country on every TV. It shows Killian like, "Who loves you and who do you love?
Who do you love?"
But it makes it very sinister kind of looking. He's lying to you. Not only does this footage show that last year's winners are last year's
losers.
They show the skeletons. They show that it's a fraud. But they've quickly, very quickly, like within 5 minutes, edited in that Bakersfield footage to where you can see that Richards was actually the hero trying not to do it. Do you guys have any problem when they do that in movies? Like, the footage from the helicopter is shot from, like, beautiful, pristine. It's not like a one camera up at the top of the thing.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's right on Richard's face, and it's right. I don't know. It's always kind of bugs me. But yeah. Anyway, the audience is like, oh shit, like Richards is a good guy, and we've been lied to all these years. Killian urges the restless crowd to calm down. You're just experiencing some technical difficulties. But Mrs. McArdle screams up, "Bullshit!" And just as Richard barges in, machine gun first, and just starts shooting the fucking place up. I have to admit, I usually don't let real world shit interfere with fiction shit, but given the shooting last week at the gay bar in Orlando, this whole scene is just innocent people clawing over themselves to get out of this firefight. And the cops are shooting people. The Resistance is shooting people. There's just blood everywhere. And, like, people are just clawing for the exits. That didn't happen a lot, but I got a little moment where it was kind of...
Got a little real?
Got a little real. You? Did it?
No.
Okay. Not to where I stopped and I couldn't watch it, but it was like, you know, it was just screaming and just machine gun fire everywhere. It was... I kind of thought about it. I mean, the biggest gun massacre in U.S. history.
and I'm watching guys get massacred. I don't know.
I don't know. It's just so alien to me because there's nothing in my body that says, hey, grab a gun and go mow down a nightclub. When I think about something like that, I think about movies. I think about fake. I think about fantasy. I think about pretend. There's nothing in me that... I'm never in a spot that thinks that, oh, this is where someone's going to come in with a machine gun and start mowing people down.
Me neither. I just, having read all the reports of what it was like in that club and like playing dead or trying to sneak out, like there's just people firing everywhere and all these innocent people. I don't know. It doesn't happen a lot, but for some reason, I guess because it was so fresh, I had a brief moment of.
Yeah.
It didn't last.
Okay.
It certainly didn't affect my take on the film. Very rarely do fiction and real world stuff.
Yeah.
Do, but no. Thankfully, the film cuts to Dynamo stumbling around the ICS hallways in his underpants. For some reason, he's walking around his tidy whities. He left
the top part on.
The top part on. The hat, even. He's got his hat, his light-up hat on, and his chest thing, but he's walking around his underpants.
I want to know who made that decision. Who was in the wardrobe or director or whatever? Like, no. Lose the pants.
It's such a weird choice. But man, why would he leave that hat?
Exactly.
It seems like the minute you got off the quad.
Oh no, dude, you have to leave the hat on.
Well, he comes across Maria Conchita Alonso, Amber, and quickly overpowers her. You thought things were pretty funny on the zone, didn't you, bitch? And Amber doesn't bar it. She comes back with, all I see is a dickless moron with a battery shoved up his ass. And they start wrestling. I don't know. I guess he's trying to rape her, maybe? He's on top of her, and she's prone.
Yeah.
But her machine gun's right there, and so she takes it, and as they're wrestling, she shoots it up at the sprinkler system, which, of course, rains down on him and fries his ass. Screaming. But yeah, why the fuck, after what he went through in that dune bug, would you just... I got my pants off. I'm done. And yes, I'm going to go get a Cadre Cola.
But why also would you simply point out... Yeah, we just made this whole suit. It is not waterproof.
Right? What if it rained in the quads?
I mean, what if somebody just threw a cup of water on him? He would have just fried his ass. Oh, there's an open electrical connection. Oh!
Well, he's toast. Back in the main studio, we pan across a sea of just bloody bodies from the audience and the cops to find Killian crawling up the stage where he's greeted by Richards. His bodyguard, Sven, knows he's on the losing team. So he looks to Sven like, for help, and Sven's like,
I guess steroids
maybe deaf.
Maybe he walks off. Take some steroids.
Nobody's really sure what he says there. But he's not going to take on Richard, so he walks off. And Killian begins pleading with Ben now. That's his last recourse. After all Americans love television.
That's what they do.
They love being entertained, and he's just giving them what they want.
He is?
Nope.
But Richards tells him that he thinks he knows what the audience really wants. And he tosses Killian in one of those damn pods that shoots down the tunnels and sends him hurtling into the zone. Drop dead, Killian says. And Richard says, I don't do requests. Good line. One of the weaker ones, but... Gotta get one last one in there.
Oh, the weaker ones.
Killian's pod flies through the tunnels, but when he shoots at the bottom, there's no net there like the other ones to break the momentum. Instead, he shoots straight into the wall, into his own face. There's a Cadre Cola billboard, to which... Actually, that's Arnold's last one-liner.
That hit the spot.
It just blows up, Killian into a million pieces. Just then, Amber appears, and she's giving Ben that look that tells him he's about to get a hero kiss. It's 1987, so the necessary power rock ballad begins to play. Restless Heart, Running Away With You by John Parr.
All too perfect.
It's very, very similar to the Commando
Fight for Love by Power Station. Very similar. So Richards and Amber lock lips, and everyone's watching it on their... For some reason, the TV cameras are still
rolling.
Focused on them and going. And everyone in the United States just cheers. They're, you know... They start cheering, actually, Richards. So as the screen fades to black, we can kind of assume that Big Ben is going to be the next president of the United States and bring order and justice and fix everything that's wrong with the country.
Sure.
You get the feeling they're going to be the first...
Power couple.
The Jack and the Kennedys of the new...
Sure.
Yeah.
He just goes away and just wants to chill with his brother.
And that's the end. It's the end credits.
Second favorite movie.
First is Predator.
Predator.
Yeah, me too. I like Predator. Yep.
Predator.
This would be right up there. I'm a big Raw Deal fan. Only because it combined some of my favorite genres of Mafia and Arnold.
Yeah.
Who would have saw that even if... But it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
I'm a big True Lies fan.
Yeah, same.
First Terminator. But also Last Action Hero.
Oh, sure.
I like to give Eraser a lot of love because I think it was his last big movie that doesn't get a lot of the credit it deserves. I'm an Arnold fan. I can't narrow it down to five, but this one's always up there. I can watch this any day of the week.
Yeah.
But watching it with the filter that we did tonight of predicting the future and predicting how our government can quickly try to be tricky with our minds and sneak things away from us and placate us into thinking everything's fine, and then the next thing you know, everything is miserable. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
Absolutely.
Code of the Gladiators.
Code of the Gladiators.
What else? Did I miss anything?
No, you pretty much nailed it.
I can't believe it's only our second Arnold.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes it's harder to go and do Arnold because...
Well, I always say we'll never do Predator because we're just... Remember that scene? It's so cool and all that. But I think, you know, given our conversation with Glenn earlier,
yeah.
Go seek him on the website. And my biggest thing with government overreach and how it can kind of slip into, like, all of a sudden you wake up one day and, like, how'd this happen? How did I lose all this?
Yeah.
The big thing I always get is like, all these people in control, all these congressmen, all these legislators, a lot of them are younger than us at this point. And it's like, at one point, we were all kids on a playground. You had the basic DNA of right and wrong, and how do people go from common sense and decency and just turn into Killians of the world? It's crazy. How's that happen? And how do we let it happen to where all of a sudden we're facing an election where we have two... This is the best of the best? This is our choices? How do we get here? How did this happen?
I think it's because at some point everybody thinks that they're right. So at some level, Killian thought that he was doing right. I mean, I'm sure he didn't wake up in the morning and say, "Hey, I want to grind everybody under my boot heel." He thought that there was probably some cloak of righteousness that he was wrapped in. And I think that's just kind of the way it is. There's just a sense of people wanting to be safe, people wanting to be, you know, like I said, you don't expect to go into a nightclub and get shot up. And then when you see that happening, you want to prevent that. And so next thing you know, you're inviting politicians to come in and create laws and regulations to keep that from happening. You know, you got to ban this. I mean, man, it's a real complicated issue. I just think that, you know, our yearning for safety, which I'm never gonna gripe at people. You know, everybody's like, oh, those who yearn for safety don't deserve freedom. That's kind of a bullshit argument, even though I love my man Ben saying that. Everybody wants that kind of thing, but, you know, the cost is kind of great when you start eroding away the Constitution to get there.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing that actually, and man, I don't want to get on a soapbox for it, but that's the one thing that's great about our Constitution is that it establishes freedom. It establishes a liberty. But unfortunately, with that freedom and liberty comes risk. And I think that that's where, you know, the dystopian futures come into, where these authoritarian powers get their leverage, is that people want to be safe.
Moments of when you're afraid.
Right.
That's when they come in.
I remember when the Patriot Act got introduced, and I was all for it. I was like, yes, you know, it's a time of war sometimes. You know, Lincoln got suspended, you know, habeas corpus. He suspended the Constitution. In times of war, drastic, hard decisions call for hard answers. So I was for it. And now I look back and I'm like, that was the stupidest thing I've ever been for in favor of my life. So I understand the desire there, so to speak.
Yeah, I think we're seeing it.
And it's funny because I know a lot of my friends are going to be like, oh, that was such bullshit action of you. You should have never been for that. Fuck you guys, you are right there with me.
Title fire, man.
I don't know. That's kind of crazy.
Habeas corpus, baby.
Habeas. Go to the gladiators.
Go to the gladiators.
Well, I pray for our country.
Always.
Because I think we're fucked.
it's like looking at Glenn in the interview today. Where's the hope, man? Just give me something to give some fucking hope, man.
I did say that, didn't I? Glenn, can I be candid with you? Can I use some foul language? Oh, sure, man. What are you feeling? This is just all fucked up, isn't it? There's no fucking hope. We're screwed, right? Just say it. We're screwed.
I'm going to be the next contestant on Climbing for Dollars.
The Dobermans are biting at me. Oh, it hurts.
I just, you know, despite my lifelong mission, I just will never understand humans.
Nobody does.
They're just imbeciles. They're so damn stupid.
We're great individually or in small groups. Mass yeah. Thing sucks.
God, it's horrible. On that high note.
Man, this is like the downest note we've ever ended on.
This is the end. This is the end of the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast.
Ever?
Yeah.
No.
This is dystopian podcast.
I don't believe it.
We'll be back. If you guys do another one, you're on your own.
We'll be back for more. We're always thirsty for more.
It doesn't matter.
Listeners, man, y'all turn bitter real quick.
It's just a lot to deal with. So tired. But I'll fight. I'll fight, damn it.
We fight for love.
I'll be part of the People's Network.
Absolutely.
You can't help it when you're a leader. They're going to look to you and you better step up.
I'm going to be Dweezil. I just want to shoot shit.
Totally Dweezil.
No.
You're Weiss. Yeah, I wish we had gotten more encouragement from Glenn. I wish we got more encouragement from watching this movie. I don't know. I'm leaving tonight with just a general malaise of, let's watch a titty flick next week. And
I'm in favor of that, by the way.
It's been a while.
Ass.
Bunch of guys drinking beer and some tits. Let's do that. Because
Lend our voice to the Huxley noise.
Nobody's listening to our voice here as far as they're going to do what they want to do politically, and we can't stop them. We're not that powerful. We're pretty powerful. Tuesday Cigar Club has some power.
Tiny, tiny amount of power. It's awesome power, but it's still just tiny.
I want more. I want more power.
Incredibly tiny.
It's enough of the tiny stuff. Go to the Gladiators. All right. Well, the what are we drinking tonight? The IPA Hop Hunter by Sierra Nevada. I loved it. Great beer.
Very good.
Great yes. beer.
Excellent.
I think we drank it all. It's a good sign.
It was a good beer.
It was a good cigar.
Good cigar. The 1502?
Yeah.
The Nicaraguan Puro.
Robusto lasted an hour and a half. Great construction. Yeah. Great flavor. Seek it out.
$6.50. Good price.
Very good price. Try to pair it together because that was a good night, pairing those.
Yeah, it really is.
All night we've been listening to Fritz Beer music. Hopefully he won't end up on the censored list in a few years. You have Fritz Beer cassettes in your closet.
Exactly.
Go seek out Fritz. KeithHowell.com.
Her lover. Her confidant.
Get him to do... that dude's about to fall out of his chair. Look sure. how tired he is.
I am tired.
I'm not going to reveal to our listeners why you're tired. That would just depress everybody more. What else? Instagram?
Yeah, hit us up on Instagram. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Subscribe to the YouTube. I like that.
Yeah, YouTube.
Oh, yes.
You can watch us on our whole thing. So you can actually watch the whole episode.
Yes.
You see Cody fall asleep. You can see me kind of drift off into malaise. See Tuttle wrap his belt around his neck. You can see it all. Anything you do now is on. Oh. You can see it. So you can't get away with shit.
Everybody's like, man.
Anything you've been doing over there, they're
going to
see.
I'm just going to stop altogether.
Everybody's like, man, when we listen to just your audio, y'all sound so lively. When I look at your YouTube, you look so sad.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe we'll cancel that YouTube thing. The microphone hides a lot. We have faces that were born for podcasting, baby. We'll be back pretty soon. Thanks for joining us. May the wings of liberty never lose a feather. Say no, motherfuckers.
The Tuesday Night Cigar Club has been brought to you by Breakaway Paramilitary Uniform, Ortho Pure Pure Procreation Pills, and Cadre Cola. It hits the spot. Promotional considerations paid for by Kelton Flamethrowers, Wainwright Electrical Launchers, and Hammond and Gage Chainsaws. Matt Cade's Wardrobe by Shea Antoine. 19th century craftsmanship for the 21st century man. Cadre Trooper and Studio Guard sidearms provided by Colchester, the pistol of patriots. Remember, tickets for the TNCC studio tour are always available for Class A citizens in good standing. If you'd like to be a featured guest on the Tuesday Night Cigar Club, send a self-addressed stamped envelope with a nude photo included to the TNCC Talent Hunt, care of your local podcast affiliate, and then go out and do something really despicable. In the meantime, to learn more about the cigars and libations enjoyed on tonight's episode, you can visit www.globalpremiumcigars.com and www.sierranevada.com. For more on O'Brien's Irish Pub, the live music leader in Central Texas, please visit O'BriensTemple.com and download their free smartphone app, where you'll find full beer listings including over 40 on tap, menu information, and a calendar of upcoming live events. To listen and purchase music heard on tonight's program, check out www.fritzbeermusic.com. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. This is Keith A. Howell saying, until next time, friends, unless we see you sooner at the pub. So keep it smoky, and for God's sake, keep it ballsy as well. I'm Keith Howell. Good night, and take care.